For January the 5th, 2018, we talk about some game preservation stories, time stories, and we hear about what you're most excited for in 2018. Welcome to Level 225. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games, kicking it three style. That's our branding. That's our branding. Kicking it three style for the beginning of 2018, starting out on a nice round number, that 225. David was going to be here, but he had a last minute complication getting ready to move. So yeah, we decided to rock it three style.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Welcome back.
Happy New Year.
Yeah.
I'm saying that like I haven't seen you.
We all saw one another last week, so we don't have as much banter.
Yeah. Like
bantered out.
Yeah, we kind of shared all of our stories and stuff. I could talk about my pasta mistake, or I could talk about the house centipede that I see on the wall in front of me, but that's not really, that's like the only news I have.
I think you have to go into detail on what the pasta mistake is. Otherwise, people are going to assume it's sexual.
Yep. There is some scalding involved. No. I
made, it could still be sexual, but
I made some pasta. I made a baked ziti kind of thing, you know, because it's cheap and it lasts for several days. It's several meals worth of food, you know? And I was like, I'm feeling a little saucy. Why don't I just make myself like a small little, like just get seconds, you know? And I might as well have just just necked a whole bottle of NyQuil because I was down and actually slept past the start time for the recording. So yeah, that, my friends, is the anatomy of a pasta mistake.
And depending on how you view it, not really a mistake so much as a happy circumstance, if you like naps.
I suppose. It's a nap that late can get in the way of things. But the nice part about a pasta mistake is this is an existential condition for right now. So I might be able to ride some of this pasta mistake energy through to the end.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh, man. So that's all that's new here. How about you over there, Dennis?
Speaking of pasta mistakes, I mean, we'll talk about the other stuff that we did on the night that we hung out in person, but we also had dinner together. And there was lots and lots of side dishes because you guys are too kind. Mm-hmm. And I think we lived off the leftovers from that meal for like a good 3 days.
That's the nice part, right? Yeah.
Oh, it was so good.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm happy. I felt bad because it's kind of like, okay, you said bring stuff that goes with burgers. I knew you were making fries, and I knew that Ben was bringing like some hot sides. So I'm like, mm-hmm. Cold sides. I don't eat those, and I don't know what's good. So I'm just going to get like a bunch of like small containers of cold sides.
Mm-hmm.
So
and there Christmas was a, there cookies. Was,
yes, and Christmas
oh,
cookies.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
That's my mom. I take no credit for the Christmas cookies.
Yes, Cole's mom is quite the Christmas cookie baker, I guess. I was going to say chef because that's alliteration-ish. But Jen and I were actually talking about tonight because we finished off the last of the fudge with Rice Krispies in it.
Oh, yeah.
That stuff is dangerous because it's cut. It's got the Rice Krispies to like thin it out just enough that you can just slam it.
Uh-huh.
That's scary stuff. It's like, you know, eating the other version of that comes to mind for me is like I can eat peanut butter M&Ms or I can eat peanut butter M&Ms with pretzels. Okay. Just like one little stick pretzel per like two or three M&Ms makes it go down that much faster.
Yeah.
So it's a dangerous combination there, but it was very tasty.
Just adulterating it with a little bit of air.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We also got to see Dennis's new house and meet his neighbors, which was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I said I was sorry.
They were very nice.
Yeah. I fat fingered the wrong address into the phone when I was telling them where to come, and so my neighbors a couple doors down got to meet the crew.
Yeah, like I rolled up and they said, "Yeah, there was somebody else here." I was like, "You got somebody else coming." So
I haven't seen them since we hung out, so I'll have to next time I cross paths with them.
Yeah,
talk with them about it. But yeah, so it was a good time. We'll talk about more about the games, I think, during the episode.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And your travel was uneventful, Ben?
Yep. Made it home safely, got home on New Year's Eve, like at like 7 o'clock, and like unpacked, and I'm like not doing anything.
No,
I'm just staying in and sleeping.
That's a long flight, like from Cincy to Austin. That's not a small deal.
Not too bad. Yeah, it's 2.5, I think.
What's that? Yeah.
It's only 2.5 hours, I think.
What? Oh.
Yeah. Okay. It's not that bad.
Oh. I don't know. I think I had a layover in LA.
That'd do it.
That's a lie. That's a lie.
Probably in Atlanta. I've had more flights that just like go the complete opposite direction to get to a hub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Than I care to admit.
Frustrating. Yeah.
Ben, I appreciate that though. Jen and I were staying up. We got to like, 11-ish, and we kind of looked at each other. We're like, we can just tell her when we stayed up, right? Yeah. Yeah. That sounds good.
Oh, I was asleep by 9. Like, that's not a... There should be no shame in that.
Sure, sure. I think if we had the realization that we weren't beholden to anyone on it a little bit earlier, we probably would have been in bed closer to 9 as well. But
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, Happy New Year to everyone.
Yes. Along with that New Year, we have the title of the year, the Toadies.
Yeah.
Do we want to do those? Do we want to do those in this opening section, or do we want to do them in the brief? I say the opening.
Yeah, what do we do now? Let's have the fun stuff up top. We have not discussed this at all, by the way, so there is no rhyme or reason. I did some sorting on the back end.
Yes, thank you for doing this. I feel bad that fell to you to.
Oh no, I love this kind of number crunching, and I was at the point of like evening up the ties when I realized I hadn't even turned on Slack to join the call. was having a little too much fun. So
yeah.
Cole was not the only one who was running a bit late, but yeah. So we can talk about that. We can talk about. Do you want to do the real deal Toadies first, or do you want to do supporting actor before that? By which I mean the alternate title of the year.
Yeah. So we can do. Yeah. Let's do the A Toadies first, I think.
Okay.
This is going to be hard because there are so many ties. So the title of the year, we mentioned this a couple of episodes ago. It's an incredibly self-indulgent thing we do. We get a kick out of the titles. It's a lot of fun to pick them at the end of every episode. And we gather all of it together and we put it to the listeners to say like, hey, I liked that one, or hey, that didn't do anything for me. and so we have the two pools. We have the regular Toady title of the year, which is titles that actually made it, and then the near misses, the A Toadies, the ones that were potential titles, didn't quite make it, but they have their chance for redemption.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So A Toady has a lot of ties.
I say we do. I kind of again evened up the ties here, so I say we do 6 through first. So we had 4 titles tie for 6th place,
mm-hmm.
2 titles tie for 4th place. A third place title, and then 2 titles tie for first place.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So why don't we do this? Do we all have the spreadsheet open? By which I mean the people on the call.
Yep,
I do.
Okay. I'll get us started with the first number 6 here. Watch the highlight that I have, and why don't we go me, Dennis, Ben.
Okay.
Cycling through them, okay?
Done.
So... at number 6, the first of the number 6s is Oops, All Grandmas.
And I don't remember that one, so that might have been when I wasn't on.
I don't remember half of these.
I don't remember a lot of these as well.
coming in also tied for number 6 is, hey, my mana bar is up here.
We should have put the hey on there. I think hey, comma, my mana bar is up here would have made that a real strong contender.
Also coming in at 6 is Don't Even Joke About Ghost Sharks.
I love that one. I like that an awful lot. And then our final number 6 is simply Buttons.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit of Jala spirit got in there.
She's still alive. Buttons at number 18 as well.
What?
Oh, if we add those two together.
Oh, we're tied.
Oh my gosh.
I'm very sorry.
Oh, shit. Check that out. Hey.
Oh, jeez. Wow. Okay.
So Button,
I demand a recount.
First.
I should have spotted that.
This is them reading the wrong, what was it? Yeah, I think it was the movie of the year, whatever.
Yeah.
Best picture at the Oscars.
Yeah, okay. So numbers, I mean, that gets up there and is tied for first place with those other ones.
Yeah, hey.
So, yeah.
All right, so Secret Preview.
Secret Preview, yes. Let's Buttons bump up that there. Up there.
I think I'm up next, right?
Yeah.
All right. Tied for fourth, and this really is tied for fourth, is Coal Hole.
Yeah. we had a lot of almost titles that were just that were like noun hole. Like if you go down a couple of spots, there's like, oh, the Stardew Hole, which is what I fell down. It's not. Ben, what's the other number four?
The other number four is Dark Souls is the opposite of Frog Fractions,
which is an inane statement that is just contains a couple of different game titles that was attached to an actual point, but I forget what the actual point was.
I was trying to decipher that one too. Yeah. I don't know
if it was a good point. I remember saying that and it actually being like something that came out of, you know, actually trying to convey a concept. So number three, Soul number three is Glengarry Cole Ross.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Yep. And then Dennis, what
all
is
all right? So yeah, so our first place titles, in addition to Buttons, the other title or the second of three that are in first, decipher that sentence.
Yeah,
is I wish he was here so I could say it to him.
Yeah,
bad David, stop that shit.
Which isn't so much a funny thing to say as it is a really mean thing to say, and I wish I remember the context so I didn't have to feel bad about it.
I would put money that it came from Jala.
So my heuristic is if it's a swear, I probably said it.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, so I feel like maybe maybe that was said in jest, but yeah, it's not a good look.
Wait, has it ever been said not in jest? I don't know the extent of you guys' history together.
No, I don't think so.
I can't imagine a situation.
Well, yeah, okay, like all friends, we've gotten annoyed with each other, but I don't know that I've upbraided him publicly on the show.
I can't imagine you saying that to him without imagining also a rolled up paper in your hand.
Just rattling a Pringles can full of coins. Oh, that's so mean. And I forget who does number one. Ben, what's number one?
The final tied for first place title is Air D&D.
I like that one a lot.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yes, those are the... I need to actually see how many that is. Those are the nine top five titles.
Yeah.
which feels appropriate for us.
Yeah.
Now, moving on to the actual winners. Again, these are top five in ascending order.
That were actually episode titles.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a bit of a recency bias on these. At number five, we have Espionoptional, which is a choice. I believe that was you, Ben, who said that, right?
Twas.
Metal Gear? Yeah, good one.
Mm-hmm.
Number four is Welcome to the Palindrome.
Yeah, that is one of my personal favorites.
Yep. You're gonna die.
Ranking it at number three, and I think I was the one who said this, Who Vigils the Lanty?
Yep. that was part of a string.
Think about it.
Yep. Parse that idea. Parse that difficult concept. That was part of a string of a whole bunch of who blanks the blank, and then we started breaking words up. Man, I feel so dumb laughing at jokes we made, but it's the life we consigned ourselves to.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, noted serial killer and dab expert.
How appropriate that falls to you.
Yeah, that's me, and that's what's on my. I was about to say business card, but I think like it's just like what I have written on like the back, like the back windshield of my car, so people know who's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as I back over them. And then finally, Ben, what is number one?
Rounding things out in a sad manner. Stop talking. I want to die.
So that could either be taken as so like that one with a preponderance of like number one votes is the thing. So that can either be like, oh, that's an especially funny riff on Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes.
Nobody. Yes.
Yeah. So like there are people either really like that or they don't want the show to continue.
So recent reviews have been very glowing, so yeah. I don't expect this level of bile from the Tony rankings.
Yeah, I think maybe people might be voting with SurveyMonkey, which is it makes sense because we asked them to. No.
Tony is where people can express their true feelings.
Yep.
Oh. No, I laughed the first time I saw this as well, because I think this was from an episode I wasn't on.
Mm-hmm.
So it got a rise out of me as well.
Do we got any personal favorites?
Oh, geez.
Oh, we absolutely do.
Yeah, I forget which ones I even voted for, honestly.
So my number one by a wide margin, number six, so just outside the top five overall, was Magic the Johnson.
Yep.
I really liked, Cole, I think this one was yours, but I really liked Depression.
Oh, yeah. A combination of depression and depression, or imprescient.
Depression, yeah. It's very fitting for 2017.
Oh, I read that Depressident.
Yeah.
No, depression makes more sense.
Yeah, I'm taking a look here. I really forget what I voted for.
I've the other one that I think of is Five People or 20 Clowns.
Mm-hmm.
That was an especially fun discussion. So
no, I remember Deborah the Eye is Coming.
Yeah,
yeah,
say it right.
Deborah the Eye is Coming. Yeah. So yeah, good stuff. Mm-hmm. So thanks everybody for voting in that and for putting up with our self-indulgent nonsense. It is a fun tradition. And look forward to the 2018 Toadies coming at you in about 12 months.
Yeah. I imagine it's got to be simple enough to put this in a format that is easily browsable for people like me who are data nerds and would find this list very interesting. We can probably like put up on the Slack or something a link to it just for people to view.
Yeah, yeah. I would want to make it pretty. Is my is my thing.
A little design on that.
Yeah, yeah. Even if it's just a public, even if it's just a public Google Doc. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was looking at the 2016 Atodies and was just it's just hot package. Which I don't know, guys. I don't know about this.
You know, we've come so far. I feel like our title game has evolved so much from Hot Package.
Yeah. Well, let's go make some more titles by doing this show, which will be the a pretty regular episode. If you know, it's three style. We've got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and we're going to get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Ben, yours is most related to closing out the business of last year, so why don't we start this?
Yeah, it's basically just a report. It's just a list of top-selling video games on Amazon in 2017. The notable thing about it is 7 of the top 10 are Nintendo Switch games.
Wow.
So top of the list is Super Mario Odyssey, followed by Mario Kart 8, and then Legend of Zelda. The first non-Nintendo game on the list is Horizon Zero Dawn at 4, and then Call of Duty World War II. They treated them as two separate ones between PS4 and Xbox One, got the 5 and 6 mark, which kind of feels like cheating.
Yeah.
And then everything on out is a Nintendo Switch game.
No, Splatoon 2 is Switch, and then the Pokemon, which those shouldn't be two separate titles, Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, those are 3DS. And then
Good. Number 10 is Legend of Zelda for Wii U.
Which is crazy. It's absolutely crazy to see a Wii U game at the top of any kind of list.
You know what this tells me is that the Wii/the Wii U has the highest concentration of people who don't know how to use the on-system store.
Mm. Maybe. Well, I mean, have you ever tried using it? It's a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. So, I mean, take that for what it's worth. I'm imagining that might have something to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, like, there were a lot of people on Amazon are using it to buy, like, store credit kind of stuff.
Yeah. So the 1 and 2 just pure items, not video game titles, were both PlayStation Store gift cards. And I have a story about that that maybe contributed. PlayStation, understandably, is now
Were all those yours?
Yes, most of them.
Okay.
I got hacked, you guys. PlayStation is understandably very, very careful now with its credit card data, almost to a fault, to the point where if any tiny little thing is wrong or doesn't match up, or in my case, I moved, right?
Okay.
And even though I had changed the addresses on the card in advance and that was all ironed out, PlayStation freaked out on me and would not let me use my card.
Oh, no.
This happened to be right as Destiny 2 was about to release. And so, like, it was the night before I wanted it downloaded for the next day, and, right. and my workaround was to buy the PlayStation Store gift card from Amazon, and I was still able to enter gift card, you know, codes.
Right, right.
Even if I couldn't use my credit card on PSN and use that. So maybe that contributed to the sale of PlayStation Store gift cards.
Yeah, you know, drop in the bucket. This is great. Like, it's cool to see Nintendo stuff doing as well. I mean, in one sense, like, newsflash, popular game publisher sells popular games. but after kind of the trouncing they took with the Wii U, as alluded to earlier, it's good to see these good games, you know, doing as well as they are.
Well, and there's only one new IP on the list, which is Horizon Zero Dawn.
I was surprised to see that selling as well, specifically because that is... Well, I guess it doesn't make sense because, or that doesn't matter because they are breaking out the different platforms. It's also a little bit crazy to see a new IP even outsell the Call of Duty game. Like, that would not have been the case 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would not have been the case, I imagine, if they had combined PS4 and Xbox One as well.
Right,
but like
right.
you said, Horizon Zero Dawn was single console, so I think it's fair to split them apart.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you remember the launch timing. Horizon Zero Dawn came out like a week, maybe even less, before I think it was Breath of the Wild and like six other gigantic games.
Right, right.
So it was immediately the pun intended redheaded stepchild of,
come on.
of games in that time window, and still held its own. So I'm very happy to see that. I need to go get to the DLC for that sometime.
I was going to ask if you had played that, and I'd forgotten that you played that.
No, I fully intend to.
No,
however.
Neat.
Yeah, interesting stuff.
I miss the NPD numbers. They stopped doing those 6 years ago, I think, publicly. It was fun. It was fun to see the horse race, you know.
Yeah. Well, those if I remember, only reflected in-store sales, right?
I can't recall. I remember it was like in-store, but not Walmart was the thing. Walmart wouldn't contribute data for them.
Sure, so
like,
sure.
It was incomplete, but like there was a consistency in the way that they did it. It's useless information. Like, as a consumer, that doesn't mean anything to me aside from like rooting for things I think should be successful.
People liked the thing I like.
Yeah. I'm a valid human.
Or I like the thing that people like.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, other way around. Definitely the other way around.
Yeah. Because it's the kids who are wrong.
looking forward to 2018. It also, I was looking up like Switch games coming out. Like, Yoshi looks really awesome, and they have a sequel for No More Heroes coming out. So I'm excited about those.
Yeah. Bayonetta 3, I think, is coming out. Mm-hmm. If not this year, then
ooh,
next.
Hey.
Yeah. Yeah. Into it. Dennis, tell me about what's going on with Gravity Rush 2. This is kind of a bummer.
Yeah, this is a bummer because Gravity Rush 2 sold mediocre at best.
Right.
Was reviewed fairly well. It has a core of very loyal players, you know, like 7.5. So,
yeah,
it reviewed inoffensively, maybe.
Yeah, it's it's a kind of about like the first one was beloved. I don't remember hearing an awful lot about the second one. I think the first one got a lot of traction by being an early hit on the Vita, which had kind of a dearth of good stuff at that time.
Yeah. And it was re-released on PS4.
Yes.
The original game, and then this sequel was obviously on PS4.
Yeah.
However, because of the weak sales, just a year in, they are shutting down the online servers. There is kind of an asynchronous co-op / multiplayer element to the game, so you're never directly playing with anyone else.
Right.
But when you're hunting for treasure chests, you can get photos of where the chests are from that other people have taken, or upload photos yourself once you find the treasure chest, which helps you get in-game items. And then you also get a currency called Dusty Coins.
Dusty Tokens. I was going to call that out if you didn't say that. That is a crazy name for an in-game currency.
Can we stop for a second and talk about how we have a county auditor named Dusty Rhodes?
Yeah, I see his name on all of our gas pumps.
Yeah, every time I fill up, I'm like, what parent did that?
Yeah, well, you also have noted and famous Cincinnati Reds, I believe, manager, if not player, Dusty Baker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of dust in Cincinnati.
Yep.
also dust on these tokens, apparently. But you would get them by, you could choose when you were doing certain race or activities in the game to load in someone else's ghost to race their ghost. Like you would see in like time trials mode and other racing games, and collect dusty tokens for beating them. And those were connected to special, I don't think anything mechanical. No, excuse me. There was something mechanical. So special items, both cosmetic and mechanical, that could only be gotten through these kind of online, if asynchronous, actions.
Okay.
And they're shutting down the servers early. Yeah, that's kind of sucky in its own right, but they have announced absolutely no plans for giving people access to these items now that they can't be gotten through online means. So effectively, once these servers shut off on the 18th of January, they'll be gone forever. Like, anyone who doesn't have them will have absolutely no way to get them.
Huh.
At least no way that's been announced. They could pull 180, or they could certainly react to what the fans are doing, because the community, whatever community there was, has absolutely exploded. People, have picked this game up on deal and then put it on the backlog, and they're suddenly like, okay, now I have to play it. I have 2 weeks almost exactly to play this game. So hey, if it's sitting on your backlog, start playing it now if you want all the items that you can access in the game.
So the nice part, and the thing that makes my heart rate go down just a little bit, is that this isn't like mandatory story stuff. Like, if this is a mostly single player game that somehow becomes unfinishable because of a server thing, that is garbage. But yeah, still, there are people who would be motivated by that kind of completionism, and they should be served.
This makes me wonder, like, why is it like an all or nothing thing for servers? Like, I'm curious why they can't just taper down with the number of people using it.
You are channeling David right now.
Yeah.
Pop that shit on AWS, dog.
Exactly, yeah.
They're not a sponsor, but
yeah, I'm sure there are people who would be willing. And clearly, with the amount of community activity that, like, people are asking, how do I farm these coins as fast as possible, and help me do this, and so there's this whole kind of effort that's sprung up as the deadline has loomed closer.
Yeah.
I'm sure at least one or two of those people would be willing to support the servers.
Yeah.
In some very limited form.
Yeah, I'm positive it is a legal thing.
Oh, sure, yeah. Sure. What's particularly egregious about it, though, is that leaderboards are going away, and leaderboards from, I think it's like the first game, are still up. So if they can support those, why wouldn't they be able to support the leaderboards from this second one?
Yeah.
So it's sad to see this happening. It's it's a problem that all games are kind of facing in one form or another now that some kind of online content or mode is ubiquitous, is their deaths, as it were, online become increasingly kind of messy.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about a few weeks back the Demon Souls end date that's coming up. You're saying it's inevitable, but it might not be.
It's like the unplayed toys in Toy Story just getting cast as aside. So sad.
Yeah. Getting cast aside until somebody comes along and says, hey, this DMCA makes no sense. So why don't we...
I don't know. There's hashtag don't forget Gravity Rush on Twitter if you want to join the movement.
Ugh.
Yeah, I don't see any metrics on how big it actually is. But
okay. Huh. Something about me just reacts very violently to that idea.
The clunkily named hashtag, perhaps?
What's the matter, Cole? You don't like slacktivism?
No. it's fine. I'm not going to tell people how to live their life. It just for some reason, made my gorge rise about that. No, I was trying to do a segue, guys. I was trying to do a segue because my story is about a group of people at the MAID, the Museum of Art and Digital Entertainment. It's over in Oakland. I hear Jim's Storm Dancer.
What?
Yeah. So Jim, video game soft dog, the guy who made Frog Fractions and Frog Fractions 2, originally his name was Jim Crawford. But when he got married, he and his wife decided, you know, instead of like her taking his name or, you know, having any kind of, you know, disparity between that, they decided, well, why don't we both change our names? And so it's Jim Storm Dancer now. So.
But you can do that?
Yeah.
Jen,
yep.
Hey, Jen. Do you know we can change our names anytime we want?
You're waking up your children.
All right, we'll have to start planning.
You're waking up Little Storm Dancer and Little Storm Dancer too.
Yeah, we're all Storm Dancers now.
That's how my new version of my last name works, is that for every child you add a number. Not for the first name, it's for the last name.
Yeah. So I think that Jim is associated with them in some way, because I hear him talk about that, or it might be a completely different thing. What they are doing is they are joining this petition to tell the Copyright Office that the DMCA needs a cutout specifically for the preservation of online games, specifically for MMOs. Number of high profile MMOs have shut down over the past decade. This article has City of Heroes on there, which is one that I know was sorely missed, at least by David. Dennis, I know you played that.
Yeah. I'd go back to it.
Yeah. There was, a huge dust up about classic WoW servers being run and shut down. What they're saying is like, hey, with the increasing number of games that exist almost solely online or exist as some kind of service, there needs to be some kind of, if not protection or, you know, encouragement, at least a way around being prosecuted for extending some kind of effort to preserve these things without any, without trying to make money off of it, I guess. That this stuff will all go away and we will all be poorer for it if we don't kind of agree that it's worth saving. So I beat this drum a lot, and I don't know that I have a conclusion out of the back of it aside from like yay, but it seems like a worthwhile thing to pursue.
Yeah, but I love the way that this has gone about, which is not just a petition that's whining about what's wrong or hey, don't do X, but they have, it seems like they've got a very clear outline for like, here's what we want you to do. Like right. There's a constructive, very clear way for the people that they're complaining to say yes.
Yeah.
Which is always a more effective way. Not to mention more like humane and good way to get what you want done.
Yeah.
Done.
Yep. Yeah. So like I said, I don't know that I have an awful lot to say about this. I hope that they are, I hope that they're successful.
See all fools back in City of Heroes once this is enacted.
Man, I love jumping around in that fucking game.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't pick jumping as your movement mode, I don't know what to say to you.
That's I was so mad because I did not do enough research before I started, and I think I took super speed. And then like to change that ability, you basically have to start a new character. Like yeah. I remember being very, very difficult to respec. So
yeah, it's like baked in.
Oof.
Segment transition.
Multiplayer. I need to massage my neck from the whiplash of that segue.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
It's a simple one. Just with the new year and people feeling excited for that, I ask specifically, what game are you most looking forward to in 2018 and why?
Yeah, and I'll get us started here with Greg, who says, I don't tend to follow new release dates since they get delayed so often, and I almost never buy anything new at full price, so I guess I'll just default to the one game that I'm most interested in playing, Kingdom Hearts 3. My backlog of games that came out in 2017 could keep me going all year. Same. Is Kingdom Hearts 3 coming in 2018? Or is that a...
Supposed to be.
Huh. Cool. There's been a lot of Kingdom Hearts talk on the board recently.
Yeah, I think this might be in part why. Did one of the recent, you know, big events have a trailer for it? A new trailer for it?
Maybe.
It has to have.
I know it was brought up in a multiplayer recently. And I think that got I think that started a perpetual Kingdom Hearts machine.
Yeah.
Let's see. Ben, what does John say?
John says, I'm looking forward to Shin Megami Tensei Strange Journey Redux. Love RPG remasters with QOL improvements and new BattleTech and the new BattleTech game.
Yeah.
Don't know what QOL means.
Quality of life.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. I'm curious about this. No, you know what? We talked about Shin Megami Tensei Strange Journey and that Redux or redo, what, I don't know how to pronounce that. That's on the 3DS. Yeah, that's the one where you're like wandering around in a dungeon and mapping and stuff. Yeah, that'll be great.
Hmm. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
And then BattleTech does look interesting.
I don't know what that is.
It is a giant mech combat game. But if I'm thinking of the right one, it is like a tactical game, so like turn based.
Oh, nice. Like a front mission kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Michael say?
Michael said, my friends are very excited for the new Monster Hunter, and I'm along for the ride. Jumping into a title as a community is a uniquely fun experience. I can't wait to discover new things in the game and learn everything about the world together with my buds. I'd be curious if Michael has not played any of the previous Monster Hunters, because that would be especially interesting.
I want to say he has, but then again, okay. I might be just conflating him with all the other community members who are like all about it.
Sure. I remember very specifically though, they named it Monster Hunter World instead of Monster Hunter, you know, 5 or whatever they're on, because they specifically wanted to kind of indicate, hey, this is accessible. This is something for new people to the franchise.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty dramatic change. At least in what I've read from what's come before. So, okay. I can see a lot of people jumping into that who did not play it before.
Yeah. So this is the point a couple of months before a new Monster Hunter game comes out where I think, yeah, this might be the one. And then it'll come out and it'll be like a month and everybody will have moved on from it. Like, yeah, that makes no sense. And I'll wait for the next one. And then a month before the next one comes out, I'll say, yeah, this might be the one.
Yeah. we can make a pact. I've never really gotten into one either, so.
Yeah, I don't know that I could fulfill a pact.
Yeah. It's an easy way for me to win all your stuff then. You know, the first person to stop playing Monster Hunter World has to forfeit all their possessions to each other.
You would get all of my starting equipment. Oh, you mean my actual physical thing? You would
No, physical things.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you would ruin me. So, Adam writes, I'm looking forward to the new Spider-Man game. It goes back to Spider-Man games on PS2. I love web swinging around New York.
Yeah.
I was disappointed that wasn't out closer to the movie. Sure, give it all the time it needs, but I was jazzed. I was hoping to jump in and do that too.
And it is not specifically connected to any of the movies though, right?
I have no idea.
Okay. Most of the video games?
Yeah, like most of the video games on the PS2 are directly kind of following the plot of the movie.
Yeah,
I think the first one was actually kind of similar to the Spider-Man movie. Like, it had like the Green Goblin and stuff like that.
Yeah, Spider-Man.
But was 2 not the same way?
Yeah, Spider-Man
2 was completely independent, I think.
No. Two roughly followed the Doc Ock storyline.
I just remember delivering pizzas, but I guess he did that in the movies.
Yeah, he did. That was like a side mission. It was doing like the Spider-Man version of Crazy Taxi.
Well, and you know, like the first one had a whole bunch of villains who weren't in the main game because it's a video game.
Yeah, so. Yeah, like Spider-Man 2.
Or in the main, excuse me, movie.
Yeah, Spider-Man 2 had like Mysterio in it, and had the Rhino and stuff. Like it was.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 2 is really good. Yeah.
Pre Jamie Foxx Electro.
Man, I was playing the Spider-Man games all the way back on the PS1.
Those were good. Those NeverSoft ones.
Yeah. Yeah, they were a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, sorry. Adam just reminded me that Spider-Man games exist, and now I'm sad that I'm not playing one right now. Ben,
do you guys
want
a deep dark secret?
Sure.
Sure.
I never actually played Spider-Man 2. Oh. I played all the PS1 games. I played the first one on the PS2, and I never got around to the second one on the PS2.
Hmm.
Which is, I think, the one that did, like, the real, like, web swinging physics.
Yeah. Yep.
Two is the one that people remember most fondly.
Yes. Yep. So, a unique blind spot for me.
Yeah. I don't know if it would live up to the hype if you went back to it.
But, yeah, likewise.
Yeah.
It's definitely binge-worthy at its time.
Yeah.
I'm probably better suited to just hop onto whatever this new one is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, they're hitting that that note pretty hard that it is going to, scratch that same itch.
That I can deliver pizzas?
Maybe.
Why not?
Ben, what's Sam
says? Yeah, Sam says, I'm halfway through a quest to play all of Kingdom Hearts. So Kingdom Hearts 3. If Death Stranding comes out this year, then that too. Otherwise, I still have a bunch of stuff from this year to play and a few years behind on console exclusives for the most part. Word.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't say it had to come out in 2018. Just what you were looking forward to the most in 2018.
Oh, wow. Huh.
Yeah, see?
I'm looking forward to more previews of this game. Which, honestly, with Death Stranding, that might be sufficient as well.
True. True enough.
It strikes me as a game that will be very, like, let's playable.
Yeah. Although, who knows if there's going to be some kind of weird agreement that they make people sign or whatever, or if they're going to DMCA stuff. I always get so anxious about that with story related games, that somebody else is going to pull that Sega Atlas shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Patrick say?
Patrick says, I'm looking forward to the new God of War game. I played the old games when I was younger and enjoyed them, but it really looks like this one grew up with me. I'm also looking forward to Spider-Man, since he's been my favorite superhero ever since I was a little kid. Yeah, I'd like, mechanically, the last God of War game that I remember very fondly was God of War 3, the first one on the PS3.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing was a freaking masterpiece. And I think plot-wise, it was still pretty simple and over the top. But
Kratos was still angry.
Yeah. But it was kind of like, you know, it wasn't completely written out yet. Whereas I feel every game that came after that just doubled down on the simplicity and over the topness to become more just reductive and a parody of itself. So I like this effort on this one. I would never expect a God of War game to grow up completely, because mm-hmm. there's just a bit of that primal rage that's fun.
Right.
And very much part of that ethos, but to rein it back in so that it means something versus just being a parody of itself.
I haven't seen footage of it in several years since they first announced it, but the gameplay, if it's still what it was there, I'm really excited that the combat's going to be a little bit more deliberate. I know that people like the Tappa 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 in the God mm-hmm. of War series, but the idea that it is more about like a Witcher or soul style, like I'm hunting a big thing style stuff, or like navigating an environment, that is a style of play that makes me just more interested in general.
Yeah, it's a crime that you guys don't know what I mean when I say this, but more like what Hellblade does.
Where
every you know, every swing just feels heavy and like there's weight behind it.
It's a crime, huh?
It is. I need to get you guys to play that game.
Yeah, yeah. I have a Steam gift card burning a hole in my pocket, and that's on sale. So
ooh.
I need to decide if I'm playing that on PS4 or on Steam.
Clock's ticking.
Yeah, it is.
We gotta try SharePlay sometime. I don't know if it works with that, but
I don't know. That always seems like voodoo. Like I don't know if that's inappropriate.
Yeah,
to say.
A way to guarantee that everything you do will be slightly out of time.
Yeah, in this action-based game.
yeah.
Let's see here. Juan says, Ni no Kuni 2. Wonderful animation, excellent combat system, and the first entry had a story that would make the manliest of men feel ways about stuff. That's very good. I still regret waiting as long as I did to play the first installment. Also, Dragon Ball FighterZ, or Fighters, not much for fighting games, but nostalgia plus next level trash talk will ensue. Yeah.
I miss Nina. Has anyone on this podcast played Ni No Kuni?
No.
I played the first one for a little bit.
Oh, I answered for
you. There
you
go.
Yeah.
I got stuck in a fight that I could not win, and I did not know how to. I think it was a long time for my previous save, so I kind of gave up.
Yeah.
That's that makes me think of what was the launch title for PS3 that had a very similar kind of whimsical ethos. It was an RPG. It never got
Folklore.
A follow up.
Folklore.
There you go. Yeah. It made me think of that, but everything I've heard from people about it is absolutely glowing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's a way to play it on a current gen system yet. However,
maybe it's on like the PlayStation streaming service, possibly.
Ooh, I have no good idea. Call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
PlayStation Now or whatever. Yeah. Ni No Kuni, like that should be a game that I'm really excited about because A, it's level 5 and B, it's Studio Ghibli. I just missed the train on it real bad.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, well, let's see here. And Ben, what does John say?
John says, I'm looking forward to Nintendo's eventual virtual console announcement. Hopefully.
Yeah, I want that. I want that real bad. I don't want these overpriced like Nintendo arcade things that are out. Like, give me a virtual console. I love my Switch so goddamn much. Pixel art looks amazing on it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do ours. I'll do mine first here because I just remember that this is coming out. Vampire yeah. or whatever it is. The new one from Don't Nod.
Mm-hmm. Oh, huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Life is Strange.
An adolescent teenager vampire in high school.
Yep.
Social outcast.
Yeah. A vampire who can rewind time and take selfies. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You would think, hey, vampires are already really powerful. Why can she rewind time? You know what? You're going to find out in the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you dummy. just be led somewhere for once.
just go along for the ride. yeah, it's coming out this spring. I'm really excited about it. Like, I never played Remember Me. Like, I need to, like, dip in and make sure that they're not a garbage studio at Action. But I trust their storytelling chops really well.
Oh, no. Remember Me is horrible.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. It's bad.
Yeah. Oh, well. I'm still excited, though. I'm still excited about this Victorian vampire game.
Mm-hmm.
They're making Ben, how about you?
Similar, an indie studio that's making like a bigger game. I am excited for A Way Out. I think that game looks really cool. I think it has a lot of potential.
Yeah.
Secondary entries, I'm also excited for The Last of Us 2. Not a lot of people pop that on shit. But I'm very scared. Sure. Very scared for that game that it won't be, because it
the first one's a lot to live up to.
Yeah.
Yeah, they kind of got brutalized for their first trailer, too, because it was too brutal.
The first game's really brutal. Like, I don't mean to overuse that word, but, like, it's pretty rough.
But it fits thematically.
Yeah.
It is, and, you know, I'm not saying it shouldn't have been brutal. Maybe I should rephrase it as it got brutalized for having all the brutality of The Last of Us disconnected from anything meaningful.
Hmm. Right. Any of the desolation or vulnerability in
or anything that would make you care or understand anything about why you're going through it.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just because they're trying to show some kind of escalation.
Yeah, it could be.
I would like to go back and see what the original Last of Us trailers looked like.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Dennis?
Yes, I was browsing a list of games coming up in 2018, and the one that really caught my eye was Extinction, and I hadn't heard of it before this list, and I'm curious if either of you guys have heard of it.
What is it? I'm sorry?
The game is called Extinction.
Extinction.
I have not heard of it.
Yeah.
No, I have not.
So I put a link to the trailer for it in the Slack, and you don't have to watch it now, but it looks like a blend of a couple different things. Like, there is some Assassin's Creed in there. There's some Shadow of the Colossus in there. In fact, the core kind of thing that it touts is you are going to be fighting 150-foot tall ogres as like the main thing of the game. And it talks about the idea of, dynamic combat maneuvers to effectively traverse giant beasts and expose their weak points, which is very, very Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah.
And the trailer, though, visually kind of has a lot, maybe kind of towards Fortnite, a little bit of Pixar, Overwatch kind of style in there. Yeah, colorful, not just pure dark and gritty, mm-hmm. which is kind of a contrast because it is a very brutal like trailer. Like it's showing civilians getting ripped apart by little gremlin type things, and the hero, you know, cutting off the arm of this giant monster, which promptly like grows it back. Like, but if it can deliver on that Shadow of the Colossus kind of experience, I am all for it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't think there is much about the game other than this one trailer, but it's supposed to come out in March.
Hmm.
And it's done by the people who made Killer Instinct and Dive Kick. So they primarily have done fighting games.
Yeah.
Previously. So I'll be very interested to see this kind of first effort, if you will, into a new genre.
Yeah.
Just the way his arm grows back makes me question this entire game.
Well, I think that's a very D&D kind of deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That ogres grow back their body parts.
Trolls. Trolls do. Ogres don't.
Trolls? Not ogres?
Not ogres. Trolls. unless you kill them with fire.
I did not know any of this.
Yeah.
I apologize for
no. It's fine. It's fine. I just
fantastical beasts.
I don't want to get a letter. We're like one of the monster. I'm like monster vampire.
Yeah. So the one like thing that worries me is the end of the trailer shows just hundreds of these giant ogres flooding into the town. Mm. And so if you're taking each of these big brutes out very easily, and it's more about fighting hordes of them, I feel like it'll lose some of the impact that I'm hoping for. And some of the impact that Shadow of the Colossus had.
Yeah, you want
that. So it's it's not going to be there's 16 of them period or however many there were for Shadow of the Colossus, but I would hate to see them take too much of a step away from that. So we'll see. Yeah. I love the idea though of entire levels designed around and on this giant rampaging monster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I had no idea this was a thing. I'm curious about it now.
Yeah, bit of a dark horse, but I'm excited for it.
Yeah. Because we didn't get very many responses on that, how do you feel about two quick multiplayers? Or two quick free plays?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. So this is from the last one here, but Paul asks, what is your favorite console or PC controller besides the keyboard and mouse of all time? Mine is the NES Advantage, seconded by the equivalent on Sega Genesis. The Advantage was the like the arcade stick for the NES. It was very good and had very satisfying clicky buttons. Yeah.
Yeah, huh. Man, anything with a light gun for me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I guess that's not specifically
like a gun con kind of thing, or are you talking Zapper?
I mean, the thing that comes to my mind when I think about a light gun is the stuff that's in the arcades that actually has like the action that kicks every time you fire and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I held on to the light gun for my PS2 system way longer than I ever like played the games, just because it had so much sentimental value for me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the person who was clicking, who was driving Jaw like crazy with my NES Zapper a few weeks ago. So I'm a big believer in forward progress. I don't want to hold on to things that are outmoded. I think that there's only one thing that is keeping the DualShock 4 from being a perfect controller, and that is the lack of an octagonal surround around the analog sticks.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't think I'd like that.
No? Oh, I love it. I love octagonal gates.
Because the Wii has it, and mm-hmm. I dislike it every time I play with that.
I like knowing up is up.
Huh. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, but no, the DualShock 4, with the exception of that stupid touchpad, which doesn't really get in the way, so it's hard to be that angry about it, has the right contour and the right heft to it. Prior to that, I would say the wireless Logitech controller for the PS2. Because he has contour and heft.
Do you use the touchpad for text entry?
When I remember to, yeah.
Okay, I do, and that's. I think I haven't seen any game that's used it like incredibly. So otherwise, it's forgettable. But yeah. I do use it for that, and I do think it's effective for that. But I agree.
Weirdly, The Witcher does it very well because like swiping up, down, left, or right will take you very quickly to different menus. That's the best use of it that I've seen. Just because. Like getting to the world map is easy without extra clicks and stuff.
Yeah. Most of the time, it's literally just another button. Like, the fact that it's clickable is 90% of its functionality.
Right.
That's an expensive button.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, like, you know, the PS4 controller also has the speaker in it, and you can plug in a headphone to it, and yeah, it's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I think falling victim to a similar thing as voting for the most recent Toadie type thing. I think Nintendo Switch is one of my favorite controllers just because of, like, how many things they covered with it, how it can be like a classic controller, it can be like a Wii controller, it can be like a Wii U controller with the picture on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just super impressed by that. And then, like, the vibration on it is really awesome.
Yeah.
And it has that little light gun thing on the one controller, like the IR sensor.
For playing rock, paper, scissors. Yeah.
Or eating contest on the 1-2 Switch.
Yeah. Let's do one more. This is just one for Daddy. Chris writes, favorite local brewery, and for you Cincy folks, Taft's Ale House or Rheingeist.
Oh,
mm, so good.
I went to Taft's Ale House for the first time over Christmas break. I had not been there before.
Their beer is fine, but their tri-tip is tremendous. We're getting their tri-tip catered in tomorrow.
Nice.
Yeah.
That said, I have a bias. I have friends who work at Rheingeist, so I'm going to say that.
Oh, Rheingeist for sure. Like, Truth is my everyday carry in terms of beer.
I would go Taft's Ale House. And the reason is I'm not a fan of hoppy stuff, and Rheingeist just tends to be a step more hoppy than I like.
Yeah. I could see that.
They've both got amazing beers and a lot of stuff that I like, but I think I can drink almost anything from Taft's, whereas I feel like there's a smaller list of stuff that I really, really like from Rheingeist.
Yeah, with Rheingeist, you have to go darker. You have to go into their porters and stuff. Like, their one, the Cougar, their kind of blonde ale, I think.
Panther?
That is. Panther, yeah, there we go.
Panther's
dark, Cougar is...
Yeah. The Cougar, I think it's a little bit weak. I don't care for that as, like, a lighter beer, but I don't mind hoppy stuff. But yeah. that's a perfectly reasonable answer that you've given.
So one of my Christmas gifts from Jen was a punch card for local breweries. And you go and you show this and you get a flight from them and a pint glass from them.
Yeah.
So we've only been to one so far. We went to Fretboard. And I think that just recently opened up, and it's really close to my house.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
And it's like, you know, they're all about music and beer. So like, their main brewery has a stage always set up, and there's a lot of musically inspired stuff.
Yeah.
Like their porter is called Jazz. And it was good. I really liked their porter.
Yeah.
And their Hefeweizen was super good.
Yeah.
And usually I'm less about that, but.
I always forget about Mad Tree, and then, like, when I drive to the grocery store, I realize, oh, they just put in that huge Mad Tree brewery like 2 minutes from my house.
Yeah, they'll literally trip and fall into it from your front porch.
right, just fall into the tanks. Oh, what happened to Cole? Yeah, he got fermented. Oh shit. Yeah. So that probably alienated a bunch of people. Ben, as the person who's been the most other places, or, you know, who lives somewhere else, is there a cool local Austin place that's like your favorite?
I think my favorite local brewery of a place that I've lived at would be Joseph James in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Which was in part due to surprise, because I didn't think Vegas would have a good brewery scene, but they made some really good stouts that I was totally on board with. There's a couple other breweries there that are good too. I think Craft House is another one that's in Vegas that was also made really great beers, really great stouts. So I think surprisingly those two are my favorite. I like a lot of Ohio and Michigan beers, but Cincinnati beers, for some reason, there's not a lot that I like. I like them a lot, but they're not like my number one, I guess.
Yeah. I always feel like such a carpetbagger because I come down here and I get a lot of Great Lakes too.
Yeah.
Oh, well, hopefully that didn't alienate too many people, but that was just too fun not to talk about. Thank you, everybody, for writing in, for answering the original question, or for submitting those free plays a while back. I told you we keep them, right? If you want to participate in these, watch our Facebook page on Tuesday afternoons. Thanks to Dennis and Jala who put those up. They go up at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast.
the grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Was the holiday. Let's see here. We need to start with one that all of us played. Dennis.
Even David.
Oh, yes, and David. If he was here, he would speak about this as well. And Dennis, you were kind enough, you and your wife were kind enough to host us at your home here this past several days ago to have some dinner and play a board game of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
We all played a game called Time Stories, T-I-M-E Stories.
And no period after the last E, which I look and it's consistent through the material. So I don't know what's up with that.
Yeah, that really bugs me.
Yeah. Monsters.
What are they trying to do? Who do they think they are? And we had a really good time with that.
I would compare it to the best version of D&D possible.
You said that after we finished. Say more about that.
Basically, it's like it has all of the like mystique that a D&D campaign has. Like there's twists and turns and sorts of things like that. But they have the visual element completely covered for you. You know, like they have a map of where you're going. They have panoramas of all the rooms you go in that like give it a lot of like texture to it. They do a great job of foreshadowing things you might run into later, since they know kind of exactly where you're going to be and what you're going to be looking at. So I thought even though a D&D campaign might be more open, you might be able to do more off the rail sorts of things. I thought that this was like a perfect way to have a kind of linear campaign that you still have control and choice over.
Yeah,
sure. Let's say a little more about what it actually is first.
Yeah.
Or second, I guess, by way of explaining what you just talked about. So it is kind of a role playing ish game, but Time Stories is really a system, and then you buy and play adventures within that. So we played the one that comes with the system called Asylum. And it is a giant deck of cards.
Yeah, like the deck is like your DM.
Yeah, the deck is effectively your DM. So there's and it very much emphasizes there is a rule book, but the rule book emphasizes like let yourself be guided. Don't look at any of these cards before you start playing.
Yeah.
And a big part of it is the mystery of discovering these cards. But mm-hmm. they play a bunch of functions. Like Ben said, like, you know, some of the cards will be the map of the area, and you'll kind of set those up on the board as a map. Some of the cards will set up different characters that you can jump into. So the overarching story is that you are a basically time police force.
No, you're a time cop. You're a Jean-Claude Van Damme time cop.
Yeah, you're jumping back to prevent anomalies, both in the main reality, but then also in alternate realities, which gives them flexibility to do a whole bunch of different genres and worlds, and it doesn't all have to fit together because it's, hey, you just jumped into a different, you know, an alternate reality. So, sure, there's magic here or something like that. And, you know, you prevent these events and then jump back to the main timeline. And it is possible and almost expected to fail your first time through. So it's got a bit of an escape the room kind of vibe to it, where you're trying to solve the puzzles and defeat baddies. There is combat, but everything you do takes time, and you spend time units to do it. That's a limited quantity. When it runs out, you don't lose. You have to start over.
Yeah. I really liked that it was expected to be iterative and that it would reward you. I cannot foresee a way in, like, with all the options available, a way in which even the most savvy of players would solve what we did in the first go. So, like, what I would say to people who play this later is, like, don't feel bad if you fail, because, like, that is a part of the loop.
No, and you know, at the end of it, there is like you can rate yourself based on how fast you did it, or how many tries it took you. But I'm way more happy that we kind of saw as much of the game as we did, versus taking the direct. Like if somehow we had stumbled onto the perfect linear path to get us to the end of the first time, we would have missed a bunch of really interesting and flavorful stuff.
Yeah, like it was not that, like there were several gotchas whereas obviously like a choose your own adventure trap, right? Like
Cole was literally flipping off one of the cards at one point.
Because like we just spent so many turns following this lead, and it was just like it took us down. Like, oh well, we've got to start back over from the beginning. It's not a huge problem. Like, it's not like there's a lot of steps you have to take in order to like get where you need to go once you know you need to go there. But it really like I was flipping it off, not because I was really angry at the game. There was some like bullshit mechanical stuff that like got in our way. It's like, oh, that was obviously like not tested, or it's way too harsh, or whatever. Mm-hmm. It wasn't what I was looking for in this experience. Like those dead ends weren't one of them, because it was very funny when they were
ends. Laughing heartily every time we got kind of gotcha'd. So yeah. we were enjoying that a lot. And Ben, you kind of mentioned the most creative use of the cards, which is, you know, you'll choose an area, and each area has its own mini deck of cards, that you lay out, and the backs of them are all kind of set next to each other, form this panorama of the area you're in. And then there's a brief like description card that tells you kind of what you're looking at, and gives you an overview of what each card, you know, what you can do at each card. And then when you pick a card to go quote unquote into, you turn it over and read it, and then there's more instructions, activities, etc. on the back of the card. And you know, the based on kind of where you start and then what happens on each of the cards that you go into, then you can move one card to the left or right, or continue working on whatever's on that card. Like it very much feels like you're exploring a room or an area in a very elegant way, using just a set of cards.
Yeah, the production value on this is actually really good. Like the art was fantastic. I would say especially on the character cards. I love the different characters we could play as.
Oh yeah, it was too cool. And that kind of also lends itself to the role playing. Like you choose which character you're going to be at the beginning of each run, and you can role play that as much or as little as you want. And so, you know, for some of them we did voices, or for some of them we were like, hey, I'm gonna, you know, for one of the characters, I'm like, I'm attacking every person I come across, just because, yeah. Or I'm gonna have a strong bias towards attacking every person we come across.
I picked a character who I thought would just be a joke character at the start, like, oh, this would be fun. It's like an old lady, like Mademoiselle, whatever. Like had no real special abilities. This is before I understood the combat. Turns out she's like the tank of the party, yeah. Weirdly enough. So,
well, it's a really weird form of the tank, because she only has one hit point, which means if she gets hit once, she mm-hmm. dies. But she's got such high resistance, which allows you to not get hit, that she is effectively like the tank.
Yeah, yeah. She's all crumple zoned. So like I died once. But it, like, yeah, so I was like, oh, I'll pick an old lady and I'll role play her as like just constantly on a quest for her back pills. But like that was the character I played as the whole night, just because she couldn't die.
Yeah, no, she was great. And that was a ton of fun. Yeah. Just kind of, you know, having fun with those characters, and they're incredibly evocative as well. So they do a good job of kind of prying them apart, making them feel unique. And there's unique mechanics that go along with most of them.
Yeah, it should be noted that all the characters like have some sort of drawback or like addiction of some kind that you have to like be aware of, and that might come up with the game gameplay. The grandma's is that she's bitter.
Well, I was looking at the text of that card after we had finished playing, and that's the funny thing, is it actually says in her description that, you know, it's set in an asylum, that she's actually not, she doesn't have any mental illness or you know, problems. She just fits in there the best.
Yep. Yeah, but she doesn't have like a serious, like, you know, in gameplay terms, disability. Right. Like there is mm-hmm. not like really a compromise. And that was another thing. Like every compromise comes with like a major upside. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I'm just gonna pick this, without realizing that like it like I was basically the least hobbled of us in any situation.
Well, and going in blind like that is so much of the fun. Like when you jump in, it doesn't even really tell you what you're there to do. Like, you know, you're going back in time because there's an anomaly that you have to correct, but you don't know anything about the nature of it other than you're jumping into an asylum.
Right.
And it literally, that is all you know. And in a very funny moment that we talked about, like, not to spoil anything, but there's a mistake that's made in like the lead-in that you're like, you guys are a time force. You shouldn't be messing this up multiple times in a row.
Right.
But yeah, it was a ton of fun. It was a solid night of playing.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one thing we did that night.
Yeah.
Besides dinner. But yeah, a ton of fun.
Yeah. The overarching puzzle that you needed to solve to get to the end game was really satisfying. In that we didn't spoil ourselves on it. We just kind of saw the clues and then each of us kind of played a role in like piecing it together.
Yeah, that was really fun to kind of just see the perspective that each person brought to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I felt immensely satisfied that we pulled that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's real neat.
I don't know what else there is to add on. There's a bunch of expansion pack decks that you can buy that don't get folded in with the original adventure. They are their own adventure.
Right.
I've got one, and then I think there's two others that you can buy, and I haven't looked to see if there's been more released since the game came out.
I don't know. I looked it up online, and the ones that I saw were the ones that were mentioned when we were looking at like the catalog cards or whatever they were. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how old this is. Hopefully it didn't like kind of die with that original wave. That'd be a crime.
Yeah. It's a neat system. Like, you know, I know that there are a couple of systems that are like that. Like Pathfinder has a play by deck kind of thing. This I don't know. The overarching story where you're like people who step into time technological time coffins to jump into people's minds, I can kind of take or leave, but just the idea of this overarching system that can have this Lovecraftian kind of asylum thing alongside finding a missing person in the 1990s or the Egyptian one is really intriguing to me, that it is as extendable as that is.
Yeah, and that's really what the timepiece is. It is the most convenient way to justify them telling whatever story they feel like telling.
Yes.
So I looked this up on BoardGameGeek. Apparently there's like 8 or 9 expansions for it.
Oh, wow.
What? Where? Because yeah, I'm looking at the same page you are, I think.
I was mistaken.
Yeah. All right, well, good. That's good to know. We can use this further. If we are ever all in the same city at the same time again. Yeah. So yeah, next year, let's try another one.
Let's we have at least 9 years worth of content. Yeah. No, I was really happy. At the way that worked out, and it was fun to play games with you guys and David.
Yeah, it was a great time.
Yeah. I have nothing more to add on top of that. It was just fun.
Yeah, well, I know I played more board games, and Ben, it sounds like you played more board games over the break as well.
Yeah, I did. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I can, and we'll make this kind of a games podcast for the week. So I also played a new board game called Above and Below, mm-hmm. and it is a kind of competitive village building game, so each person gets their own village to build. You can kind of build houses along the surface, but then also if you go exploring in the caves below, you can get extra spaces to build in the caves.
Which is the funnest part of the game.
Yeah, so the unique thing about exploring is that you kind of roll to figure out what encounter you get, and I think there's 250 some odd, like in that range, different encounters that you could potentially roll. And each encounter is like a little story, a little scenario. And it's only a paragraph, like it's fairly short, but they're all very creative and evocative. Like maybe you come upon an underground river, or there's just like a random old lady who has a shop down here where there shouldn't be people, or like you're set upon by very fancily dressed spiders was one of them. and so, you know, there's kind of this story behind what you're trying to do. And then you get your kind of a choose your own adventure at the end. That you then have to roll for, and that determines the, you know, what kind of reward or punishment you get for that explore. On top of that, you're also kind of recruiting new villagers, you're building new structures, like I said. There are a couple other resources that you can kind of farm for, and all of that builds towards different win conditions. So there's a couple very expensive buildings that you can kind of in the late game purchase that give you huge bonuses in terms of just your overall village points. So you get a point for every building you have, You get a point for every different kind of resource you have. And then these different buildings kind of give you your win conditions that are unique to the person that has that building. So it could be you get 2 points for every villager if you have a certain building, or you get extra points for a specific kind of resource, or any one of a number of things. But what that leads to is, as you're playing and your opponents are playing, you can't really keep track of everything that they're doing, and it's fun to hear these stories, so you're discussing those. But you're trying to kind of figure out, okay, what's my win condition, and then what is their win condition, and play off of that. Mm-hmm. It takes place in 7 rounds, and that is so perfect. The game ends after round 7, which just, like, there's kind of an automatic time cap on it. Whereas I feel like typical games with this level of strategic depth, and there's a lot of strategic depth there, no pun intended, because it's a cave diving game. Get it, guys?
No, I got it. I laughed. I don't know if you heard me. It was a sensible, like, but
no, I just wanted to make sure, because, like, it's a game. It's called Above and Below, and there's, like, a cave system, and you can, like, go down.
Dennis, you're valid. Yeah. Okay, you're valid.
But so, you know, that level of depth usually comes with a 3 hour plus time investment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas this is, you're kind of on a clock, which adds some urgency to it, but also just makes it really, really snackable. I hate that word. Bite size. Give me a non shitty word for that.
Dennis, you're going to need to go to timeout. Okay. Snackable.
You made that decision, Dennis.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a bad choice.
Yeah.
I'm going to rub your nose on that. Come on.
Anyway, so it's a ton of fun. It's been just me and Jen playing, and the game is perfectly functional with two players. I imagine it's a little bit more competitive with four, because it's less likely that you're the only one going for the win condition that you're going for, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Two people, you kind of pick your lane and then you work it as hard as you can. Whereas I think with more players, you start having to be worried of, oh crap, he's going for villagers too. Do I change course? Do I focus on buying the building first? Do I, like, what do I do? So that's a lot of fun.
The endgame buildings aren't, like, the only way to victory too. Like, I've seen people just do, like, straight resource and, like, just build up a bunch of different resources and just win the game with that.
Interesting. Yeah. If you could collect, you know, a couple of every kind of resource over the course of a game, that does get pretty powerful.
Yeah. One of the mechanics of the game is, like, when you commit a resource to your board, you can't sell it or do anything with it, but it gives you increased income for the rest of the game, and it counts as a certain number of victory points. And so you order it up from left to right. And so the ones that you have on the most right, like the most new or the newer ones that you have, they're worth more victory points. So one strategy is try and get a lot of resources of a bunch of different things and stock up a bunch of a single thing and then just dump those all on the far right. And they might be worth like 10 victory points or 5 victory points per thing instead of like 1 victory point per thing. So yeah. My strategy is just maximize cave exploring, just because I think the stories there are, like, my favorite part of the game.
It's great. We were, like I said, we were, deciphering ancient runes. We were robbing people for fun. We found a ghost in a graveyard, underground graveyard. Like, just really, really cool, imaginative stuff. And it's all from, like, I think it's like 3 writers.
That's total. Pretty, yeah.
Either 3 or 4. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, people write hundreds of pages of a book, but this is like the sheer just variety and creativity of these encounters, like, tell 250 mini stories as part of this game. It's crazy.
And that aspect of it's inspired by this old game called, like, Arabian Nights, I think, that came out like in the 70s, where or it's like, here's the thing that happens, pick a choice, and then you'll get a follow-up text for it.
Yeah, it's like it is a game that literally does operate out of a gigantic book that is like a group board game based choose your own adventure kind of thing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
so that's what I have been playing on the board game front. What about you, Ben?
All right. I have something that was, like, the opposite level of length of Above and Below, but, like, also deep strategy. I played a game called Twilight Imperium, which I had heard about and I'd seen people play and I had wanted to play for a while, but I've just never found people to play it. That's in part because a typical game of this takes about 6 to 7 hours to complete.
Holy shit. Ooh, so a work day.
So like, yes. Yeah, like one Monopoly.
Yeah. It's a long game. And so we started at like 9 a.m. in the morning. I had dinner plans at 6 p.m. that evening. Uh-oh. And we had to stop the game so I could go to the dinner. We made it to about 5:30. We got through 5 of the 10 rounds of the game. A lot of fun. The strategy seemed really cool. It seems like a really good balance to a game because it's a self-balancing game by the actions the players make. So it's not like you can't have a runaway leader, because at any point in time, if everybody has perfect knowledge of the game, then they know who to gang up against and like who to like beat down, so they're not in first place anymore.
Right.
So I'm really impressed by it. It's a space exploration type game. We played with 6 players. Everybody has a different race, so they all have like different special ability and certain goods and certain things. But the idea is you start off on like a planet. In the middle of the spaceboard is like a giant planet that has every planet can be used for production to like build more ships and stuff, or for influence. Because and influence is important because at like about halfway through the game, you form like this like Coruscant type space government thing, where you'll vote on policies with one another, so you can either vote things for like a player needs to be elected to do this, or vote yay or nay on this.
It's like the old like we're gonna play this in a classroom game diplomacy.
Yeah. It's very it feels similar to a diplomacy, except like not as harsh. We were still friends at the end of the game.
Okay.
So the way you like vote on these like things, though, is you exhaust your planets for influence points, and then you can spend a vote on different bills that might benefit you or, you know, whatever. So that aspect's really cool. Another aspect of the game that's really cool is they made alliances in the game like tangible. So you have different like cards that will say like, okay, here, I'll give you this card. If I attack you, then you can have 3 of my goods. Or I have another card that says, if I attack you, then I have to get rid of one of my turns.
So it's like, so like pre-baked little contract cupcakes that you hand out. Yeah.
Yeah. And so anytime you can kind of switch these with one another to be like, hey, we're on good terms. Let's like put action behind that so that, you know, we can, you know, if I betray you, you at least get this sweet thing. So, so I really like that aspect of it that made like betraying people like have a cost to it, and you weren't blindsided as quickly. The variants and like all the different races is a lot of fun. Like you have some people who are like really heavy and aggressive, you have some people who are like really big on tech, like there's technology you can research for all your ships that you can unlock new ships and stuff like that. And then the fighting system is really interesting. So like basically you're spreading out through this galaxy map, you're taking control of planets, and you're using that to build things or use it for influence. You can also like fortify these planets with like people, or with like space cannons like on the planet, and then you can have ships like around the planet. And so when somebody comes to fight you, if they enter your system, there's like 4 or 5 stages to it, where it's like the ships fight first, and then they like mount a ground invasion, and then they have to send units to fight your units. I don't know. It's really fun.
This sounds very involved. I stopped paying attention for like a second, like look at something, and I came back, I was like, is he talking about a video game?
Yeah, no. it is a board game. This I should mention too, this is the 4th edition of the board game. They made the first edition I think 20 years ago or something. So they've like iterated on it since then.
Called
Twilight Imperium.
Okay, so this isn't related to Twilight
Struggle. My god, sorry, I just looked at the box art for this. I've seen this before, and I remember specifically someone describing it as the board game that wishes it was a video game.
it's not wrong. Yeah, I mean, it feels kind of similar to like a Civ game, kind of, where you're very close with all your neighbors, and you're probably going to take some of them out, but
yeah.
But in our game, nobody got like completely screwed over. It was like pretty equitable the entire time. Somebody who did get screwed over like bounced back the next turn, so it wasn't a big deal. Like in general, you're not really incentivized to like crush people. You're just incentivized to kind of keep people in line.
sorry, like, the way you put that was very entertaining to me.
In line, yeah, no, like you're basically incentivized to like like limit the power of whoever's in first place at the time, but nobody's going to really have a runaway on it. The other cool aspect of the game too is every round, the way it works is you pick a card, and a card will be a different type of action. It might be like score a victory point for an objective. It might be get new resources. It might be research a new technology, something like that. Whatever card you pick, whenever you do that specialized action, everybody else has a chance to do a secondary action of that. And it's like basically kind of like a watered down, less good action of the version that you're doing. But the nice thing about that is it doesn't close out anything from anyone. So even if I'm like really hurting to go after tech and somebody takes the tech action, I still have a chance to get some sort of tech research in. And so I can plan to do that. Right. And then I can pick like another action to focus on for that round. So it's a pretty cool mechanic. Nice. A lot of love for it. Played it with one of my friends and my friends of friends. They were the ones who had the board game, came back here, immediately bought it, and scheduled a time to play it with some of my coworkers. So I think we're going to play it next Sunday, before the day before Martin Luther King Day. Mm-hmm. So now I need to find ample table space in order to do this.
I was going
to
say, I'm scrolling through screenshot after screenshot of this game, and I have yet to see a table that looks big enough for it.
Yeah. Some people had their pieces, their individual pieces, and are like bowls off to the side. And we had like a giant table, so... Yeah, that'll be it. That'll be a tough spot.
Yeah, but you would have to play this on like one of those like custom made poker tables, because like it's arranged in a hex, right?
Yeah. We played on a long table and we kind of made it work. Yeah. You just have the hex. Yeah. But
yeah, you get into the negotiation. You're like, all right, you let me move to your seat and you can have three victory points.
Thankfully, it's not too like the only pieces you move are on the hex, but you don't really need to see the other person's board or what they're doing. So that part's mm-hmm. nice. The like the victory point tracks in the middle, so most people can see that. And yeah, a lot of fun. I'm really interested to see how it goes playing it again with other people and seeing what they think of it and what strategies they pick from it.
Cool,
into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, are there expansions for this? I'm scared to ask.
I don't know. I don't think they are. I think if they had expansions, it would be like races, maybe. I think they had expansions for the third edition, actually, but the fourth edition just came out this last August, so they might not.
Okay. Oh, I'm seeing Shattered Empire and Shards of the Throne. You're not playing real Twilight Imperium, Ben, until you've got Shards of the Throne.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's kind of cute that you think you have played real Twilight Imperium.
We didn't even finish the first game. Like, we got halfway through.
Wait, the first game? Wait, is this like rounds?
He had to leave before they finished.
If you finished your first game, is that full stop the only thing to do is reset from the beginning, or are there like persistent effects between games?
No, it's not a legacy game or anything, so there's not anything like that.
Oh man, Twilight Imperium Legacy, calling it now.
Oh, man. No.
It takes 12 hours to play.
Yeah, don't you have to? Yeah, exactly. Well, no, it wouldn't take 12 hours. If every individual game takes 7 hours to play, then, like, your average legacy game, you have to play, what, like 5 or 6 times? Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, why don't we all get together to play a whole Final Fantasy game together?
Yeah, exactly. This looks
cool.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it. Hopefully it's fun upon second playing. Hopefully it doesn't like wear out its welcome, I guess, but we'll see.
It sounds like there's enough variation.
It takes long enough to play a single game that I imagine it takes a long time before you're actually picking up on strategies for it. So,
yeah.
All right. I got some more video games maybe to talk about.
Yeah, do it.
Cheers. Okay. So it was basically like a lot of new stuff that I ended up playing while I was in town in Cincinnati. So first thing is I got to play the Sony VR. One of my buddies had it and was showing it to me. That was a lot of fun. I played Static, the puzzle game where...
Oh, you were talking about this. Yeah.
Yeah. Your hands are like stuck in a puzzle box is what you see. But you're just holding a controller. And so when you press the buttons of the controller, it's somehow manipulating the puzzle box that your hands are enclosed in. And so the goal of each level is to figure out how to solve the puzzle box. And so try and figure out all the different elements. There's some good like lateral puzzle thinking where you have to kind of like look around in the environment you're at and figure out what that's saying about how you just solve the box. Mm-hmm. There's like a lot of fun little cute puzzles in it. I don't think it's like terribly difficult. You're not gonna like rack your brain over it, but it's an awesome demo for like kind of what the VR can do. And that's a good game. It's worth checking out if you have a PSVR. Other games that I played, game that the Until Dawn people made, where it's basically just like a carnival shoot 'em up. I think it's called Russia Blood.
Oh yeah.
So you're on a roller coaster, and the controls for it are really good. It has the PlayStation. I don't know how to call them other than like the PlayStation dildo controllers.
Oh, the Move controller kind of thing.
Yeah, the ones with the like.
They look like Hitachi magic wands.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll go with that. Yeah. So you use both those controllers in the game, and they have a really cool way of calibrating it where they ask you to hold your hands out in front of you and then press the two buttons. And then that's how they sync where your arms are kind of on the screen. Uh-huh. And so as you move the controllers around, like it's tracking your hand. And so it's bending its hand. And so what you're seeing in the video game of where the hand is in the virtual hand is exactly where your hand is. And so it's a really weird, like out of body experience that you have. That game was fine. Like it was a cool demo or whatever, but it was pretty, I only played like the first level of it, but it got old pretty quickly. Mm. Like especially you ride a roller coaster, you stop, clowns jump down, you shoot them. Then you keep going on a roller coaster. Then you stop, you repeat the process over.
That's really disappointing. Like I read Until Dawn and VR, and I thought that it would be more of like a, like, oh, I'm sitting in the therapist's office. And like I'm having these hallucinations and stuff. Like,
yeah, some of it carries over. I think they have the like not the clown, but the like the weird costume that from the main game.
Yeah,
that the bad guy is in. That costume is in this game. They have a couple parts that are scary when you stop the roller coaster and stop the shooting or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Again, it's only one level, so it could get better. But that's all I'm going off of.
I just don't want that team, like, based on I loved Until Dawn, I don't want them to like make these weird VR tech demos. I want them to do another story based kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I thought it was, yeah, whatever, we've talked about that game, but yeah, it's a great game. I played some other like smaller VR demos, don't want to talk about them. The other game that I played that was a whole lot of fun is Human Fall Flat. I had seen this game played back in Duckstream and it looked fun, and I always like had it in the back of my mind as a good multiplayer game to play. I ended up I think buying this for a friend or two for Christmas, and then someone ended up buying it for me for Christmas. I ended up playing it through 1.5 times with two of my friends. it's a whole lot of fun. It's a hard game to describe. It's on the same engine as like the Gang Beasts game, where you're in control of this ragdoll person, and you press in the triggers to hold out their arms, and then you move the joysticks around to move their arms around. At this point, the ends of their hands are basically like duct tape. Whatever they touch, they're stuck to. I guess it's more like Gorilla Glue. They're just stuck to. They're stuck to as long as you're holding in the trigger.
They're like the inept gecko character from BoJack Horseman.
Oh yeah. Who's voiced by the director of BoJack Horseman.
Yes, it is.
Perfect.
So you can let go of things if you release the trigger, but otherwise you're stuck on whatever you're holding. So the fun part about this is if you grab another person, for example, you can lift them up and you can throw them off the map if you want. You can lift up boxes and throw them around. You can latch onto walls, and you can even like swing back and forth on a wall to try and climb it very clunkily and very slowly, but you can do it. So it's like the funness of the game comes out of this like weird ragdoll engine that they have. But the premise of the game is it's like a physics puzzle. It's like a co-op physics puzzle game. The cool thing about it is they did a really good job of making there be multiple solutions to a single puzzle. So there might be like three different ways that you can go about solving this puzzle, and they're all pretty satisfying. So perhaps as a spoiler for the second level of the game, just to give an example of this, you start off at a level where there's a train crashed in front of you, and there's a bunch of rubble beneath it. And then to your right, there's a dumpster, and behind it is a set of doors. So in this level in particular, you can either move the dumpster, go through the doors, and go through kind of the level proper, where you're doing a couple different puzzles and it's teaching about the physics. You can say, bump that, I'm going to try and climb this train, and you can try and climb the train to get to the second level, which you can totally do.
Yeah.
It's difficult, especially if you haven't played the game before, but it's totally manageable. After you've beaten the game, it's pretty trivial to do, in fact. And then there's this third out-of-nowhere option where if you start picking up the rubble on the ground and, like, moving it out, you find that there's two doors behind this train that's crashed, and you can open them up, and there's a maze there that you can walk through. The problem is it's pitch black in the maze, so you have no idea where you're going. Yeah. But if you go back out to the train, there's a little lantern on the front of it. You can rip it off, and then you can carry it through the maze with you to find your way through the maze.
Oh, jeez.
And then you can't. And it's a shortcut. Yeah, it's a shortcut to get through the level, kind of, as much as a maze can be a shortcut.
Right.
But yeah, no. So it's like it has a lot of awesome design like that,
yeah,
where they do a good job of like doing like lateral thinking puzzles like that, but a good job of like also upping the ante as you go through a level and like So it's a really like well done game. I think the only level I didn't like, the last level for some reason was a little bit clunky and I didn't like it that much. But outside of that, all of them seemed really good. And they're just very satisfying. So and it's an awesome multiplayer game. I think it plays up to like 8 people multiplayer. I've only ever played it with 2, but that could also be fun too, is seeing 8 people just jump and ragdoll around the map. But yeah, in case you have not seen it, you could go back and watch Duckstream and watch. I think Gary was playing it and one other person.
Yeah, it was the Couch Boys who were doing it.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. So a lot of fun with that. Outside of that, I just got 2 small things that I'll talk about. Somebody gifted me Mini Metro for Christmas. Mm. So I played that. It's a lot of fun. It's a good zone out game. I get stressed out really quickly after playing it for a little bit.
Yep. It doesn't escalate quickly. You know, like there's a good portion at the beginning of any round of Mini Metro where you feel like you've got a handle on it. But when it decides like, all right, here's where the real shit starts. Then it bumps up. Like there's a definite wall.
Yeah. I want to like, I'm trying to think of how to make that game better. I don't know. Like, cause right now it's basically like horde mode, right? Where like people keep wanting to take the Metro. And so you have to keep like accommodating or whatever. What I want to do is figure out like the mechanics of this game of like what is the best subway to make, or like what is the most efficient way to make these connections, you know? Like I wish there was more of like a puzzle mode or something where it's like, here's a map, here's 2 metros, figure it out, you know, like figure out a way. Cause I think there's a not necessarily a game, there's a thing online called JavaScript elevators or something like that. Mm-hmm. All it is for fun is you just program in JavaScript to control these 2 elevators, and then you run a simulation of it to see if your program is efficiently loading and unloading people on different floors of a building. God. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
So basically you want to have a point where you've optimized the system and it is at least stable.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I'm looking for in Mini Metro, is like, hey, here's the problem. Like, here's how much demand there is. Like, see if you can figure out a subway that would work here.
Yeah. Like, what you want is like a Zachtronics, like a histogram at the end of it that like shows you like, here's how many cars you use. Like, just like rating you on a couple of different axes. Right.
What I'm looking for is a sense of satisfaction and completion as opposed to like dread of the next week.
Yeah. As opposed to like every given session of this is going to end in failure. It's just a matter of how long you can hold on. What I found myself wanting when I played that was some kind of like schedule, like, okay, there's a day night cycle, and you can kind of see, like, understand, like, okay, rush hour is coming up, and like understanding which of the, like, figuring out which of the lines is the one that's more, you know, more in demand, and like reallocating cars and stuff to like adapt to that, as opposed to like that, like, there are just more people at like all of them randomly.
I mean, the things I've learned so far that have been interesting is like how you want to set up a line, like what symbols you want on it. Like if you have multiple of the same symbol in a row, that's usually bad because you're not going to be able to pick up everyone. Like, you, since you've limited yourself to like 2 different two different things, and you're not going to be able to drop off any of the ones that you're picking up on that line if there's consecutive things in a row.
Yeah, but like building in so many transfers that they have to take, and then just the the backup that's going to happen so many moves down the road.
Yeah.
Well, and the game systematically like places like lines together more frequently the further you get.
It's such an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the few times I paused and like counted all the symbols, it does like feel like a 1-2-4 ratio of like symbols, where it's like, okay, I gotta make sure that this symbol that's like dominating this map like is like every other thing on all of my tracks. Yeah. And then try and do something like that. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's to complement this game, I think the GUI on this game is like so intuitive. It's like a beautifully designed game. Yeah. Especially when you launch it for the first time, where they just give you a tutorial for the game. They don't give you like a menu or anything like that, and you're just like off and playing the game. It was like so nice. It was like the Star Wars of video games, where it just puts you right in there.
Yeah, just drops you in. Well,
you know that the people who made that game did virtually no research on actual like Metro stuff.
Oh yeah,
they were a little bit embarrassed to admit that, like, hey, like we just liked the aesthetic versus really trying to, you know, get into the theory for people who do this as a living.
So for people who don't know, like, Mini Metro is a game whose visual style is like Metro maps, you know, for rail systems and stuff like that, and works really, really well. Shortly after the game came out, there was like an actual public transit engineer who was like, here's why this is wrong.
Here's why you shouldn't be having fun.
Well, no, I don't think that they took it that way, but it's like, okay, if you're into this area of like, if you're into this as a thing because of this game, here is more information that will tell you that like it is far more complicated and far more involved than the game does, and like here's more. I didn't read that article as like somebody trying to be a wet blanket about it, right?
Yeah.
The sound in that game is amazing too.
The music.
It makes simultaneously peaceful and heart attack inducing.
Yep, because each different line color or like symbol and stuff adds to the overall cacophony.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's very subtle. It's not in over in your face about it. It's just pleasant to listen to. All right, last thing I got is I picked up The Evil Within for Steam sale as well.
The Evil Within 2.
Yes, that's right. And picked up where I left off. Only played it about maybe half an hour more than where I was at before. Still fun. Completed kind of like the first main mission in the first area that I'm at. So I'm heading back to one of the other areas. But one of the interesting things is they have now reseeded the map with enemies. So I kind of like slowly but surely cleared the map of all these zombies. So it was like nice and quiet. I could like run around. Felt safe.
Oh, you should have known. You should have known. That's your mistake, man.
Yeah. Oh well. But yeah, still a pretty game. I got one of my first large upgrades for one of the weapon upgrades. So I'm upgrading my pistol. I'm trying to relive the Red 9 glory days, so I'm upping the like critical hits for that and the power for that, hoping that that'll be my efficient killer of monsters.
Yeah, you're melon popper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
the first upgrade for the critical hit, it goes from a 1% chance of blowing up their head if you hit them in the head to a 30% chance of blowing up the head.
Holy shit, really?
Wow.
Big jump. Whoa. Yeah.
Oh man, that's great.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That is all I've got, which is good amount for me.
Yeah, no, that's a shitload of games.
It's a holiday load of games.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I've been playing the ever-present XCOM. I think I have hit the tipping point of my Commander Iron Man run, which is the second hardest difficulty.
Okay.
Where I'm not on my heels anymore. Like my soldiers are kitted out well enough to be able to survive the occasional mistake. Not more than occasional, but still I can survive mistakes. And then the macro like game, I've got under control, where I'm not worried about effectively panic level or advent progress, whatever you want to call it. But both like the lose conditions are under control. I'm not going to lose control of the macro game, and my soldiers are strong enough that I'm going to be all right in the micro game. Mm-hmm. And so now it's the point where you kind of step on the gas pedal for main objectives. And I'm cranking through those to get to the end. So my initial ambition had been to finish it before winter break was over, but I think that's not going to happen because right. I don't feel like staying up until 2 a.m. tonight. but still, it feels really good to have mastered a difficulty that felt unfairly punishing at the beginning.
Was this your first attempt?
My first attempt at this difficulty. So I beat the game once on regular non-Iron Man, so I could save scum, once on regular Iron Man, and now I'm about to beat it, I hope, knock on wood, on Commander Iron Man, and then the next one is impossible, although I might take a bit of a break just because it's getting intense. it's still, you know, it's very difficult, and but I feel like I've kind of gained an understanding of all the systems and everything to be able to survive that difficulty. So that feels really good. And that's that. I'll probably talk about it again next when I've actually finished it, whenever that is.
So wait, at this moment where you see your way clear, where it feels like you have enough momentum to make your way to credits on this mm-hmm. particular run. Let me ask you at this point with this exuberance, do you see yourself going one step up saying like Iron Man, max it out, fuck this? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I've you can adjust the difficulty setting within the game, but I would feel like I was cheating if I only turned up the difficulty for the last mission. I have resisted the urge to just be like, okay, I'm stable in this one, so that means I can probably beat it, so I'm going to go back and start on Iron Man Impossible without beating it on Commander.
Mm-hmm.
Just for funsies and because that's like the, you know, I gotta start learning impossible mode and all the things I need to be doing differently to survive in that kind of environment. Yeah. But no, I'm going to see this one through. I was tempted though.
Yeah.
I have been playing a couple Christmas gift games, which thank you, Ben. I've been playing Heavy Bullets, which is a roguelike first person shooter. And it's very, very colorful, like kind of psychedelic. The story is that you're actually like in a computer network or computer system, if you will, and you're trying to get through all the security. So the running and shooting and everything is the manifestation of that abstract kind of system, which I think is a little bit like NetHack. Am I wrong in that? Was NetHack
it's like Transistor?
Transistor is a great analogy to it. Yes. There's not a lot of variance in the way it plays out. So all the levels and rooms are kind of randomly or algorithmically created, but it's still that one run and to the next is going to look fairly the same. So fairly quickly, you'll get a feel for what the game is like. The thing that I really like that it does is that you start the game with, you know, just this revolver, and you never upgrade to like a machine gun or anything. It's just a one shot per click revolver, and you start with only 6 bullets. And every time you fire a bullet, it will kind of more like an arrow fly to the nearest enemy or wall, and then it kind of drops to the ground at whatever it hits, which turns every room into a bit of a puzzle, because if I'm going to shoot something, I can only do that 6 times before I need to go pick up my bullets.
Right.
And you can buy or find extra bullets, but I've only ever had, I think, 9 bullets at once. So they are a very scarce resource. And it actually makes the game a lot of fun versus feeling constricting or punishing, because I think they kind of design around it. Every single enemy is a one-hit kill. And you know, the rooms are designed to where you are managing your line of sight to hide from certain enemies while you shoot at other enemies. And if you're really thinking a step ahead, you're shooting at them from sight lines that have a wall directly behind them so that if you miss, you don't have to go too far. It's a lot of fun. And, the kind of craziness that it erupts into when your plan goes wrong is as enjoyable as executing everything perfectly. It feels a lot like kind of the old school Doom style shooters. Like there's actually not even a jump button in this game. So maybe it's more like Quake.
No, Quake had jump. You're thinking of Doom. Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, where you're running around very quickly. There's no recoil and there's no kind of cone of fire, so it's very precise and very fast.
Right.
So I think I've gotten to level 4 out of 8.
What kind of enemies are you up against? Like, is it a bunch of, you know, kind of like slow projectile enemies like you, or are you going up against like Hitscan who can get you as soon as they see you? Like, what's the variety there?
No, it's mostly melee enemies, actually.
Okay.
So little critters that will run at you, or critters that will hide in bushes and jump out at you when you get too close. The sound design is good in that you get really good at listening for the hiders, to get them before they get you. Then there's also turrets placed around the level that fire bullets that travel relatively fast. Like, you can dodge out of the way if you're super quick thinking, but that's more because you kind of know they're about to fire rather than that you've seen them fire and you're dodging out of the way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So there are a couple different variants on the melee critters. Like, some are flying and some explode and some have a shield. But really that's the meat of it, is you're shooting at things that are running at you.
Right.
Which can create some great jump scare moments.
Yeah.
And so the bullets stay in the person and you have to go fetch them after you run out of bullets?
They kind of like cutely bounce on the ground next to them. It's very video gamey.
Okay.
So you can see they're like a pickup. There's some persistence between, like, you can bank extra money and pull that out so that you can give yourself a bit of a head start. Really though, once you get through the first level, and you can do that pretty consistently, once you're familiar with the game, you should have enough money just from that run to sustain yourself and buy the things that you need. And you relatively quickly figure out the kit that you want. Like, I like to have focus pills, which slow down time, and I like to have some rockets, which are exactly what they sound like. And once I find those, since there aren't gun upgrades, like, I don't really need to keep paying attention to the pickups in the level unless I need health. So that, plus the levels feeling a little bit samey, kind of put a limit on how different this game is going to feel level to level.
Yeah. This is a really attractive game, I have to say. Like, it's, I really dig the kind of high contrast, low poly banded color aesthetic to it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a game that is low graphics, high aesthetic.
Right.
And that combined, I talked about this with Steven Sasha's role, that, you know, it's a game where, like, I play it, I'm like, you know, I could probably do something like that if I really applied myself. Like, this feels attainable. And that's not to put down what they've done.
No, no.
And I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff that I don't realize that goes into it. But it just, it feels attainable, and it inspires you to create in a way that some other games don't.
Yeah. I mean, it's like what people say about, like Peter Buck, the guitarist for REM. Like, oh, anybody could play D minor, A minor, but, like, he's the one who played it the way that they did on Fall on Me.
Right. That's perfect. Yeah. I've also been playing Octodad.
Oh, shit. Have you played this before? Yeah, so
I have not. I think I played a demo of some sort, so my very, very limited experience with it. But I played it up on the big screen in our living room with Luke and Milo watching, and they loved it.
Like, it is so fun and goofy. I love that game.
Yes, it is incredibly goofy. Yeah. To the point where, like, you know, there's a bar at the bottom that shows, like, suspicion building up. I don't think that was ever more than 20% full for me. So it really, like, you know, it knows what's fun about the game, which is, if you haven't heard of it, and I'm sure that you have if you're listening, you're controlling a octopus masquerading as a dad. You control the arms and legs separately in, like, a vaguely quap kind of, you know, just one thing at a time.
Yeah, it's like every trigger button and analog stick controls a different arm and limb. Mm-hmm, So, like, you're grabbing onto stuff and trying to pull your way along, and as you knock things over, you're, like, incurring damage to your suspicion. You've seen, like, the Animaniacs shorts about Chicken Boo, the chicken who disguises himself as a head of the household, like, husband, father knows best kind of guy. It's that exact same kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's hilarious. And there's one character that knows you're an octopus, and it's a chef that wants to cook you, who shows up randomly to attack you with random you know, giant lawnmowers or, you know, knives and stuff. So super wacky, super fun. And it's a game that's as fun to watch as it is to play, which lent itself well to playing with the kids.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I think I'd mentioned as part of a multiplayer a little bit ago that that game personified me, or that character personified me. Yes.
Oh, and I think I commented on how tragic it is that that's like some indication of a weird imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
But like we're the kids. I mean, first off, visiting reminded me your kids are so adorable. They're such cute kids. Were they like at like telling you to do stuff? Were they like calling out shots, or were they just kind of reacting to stuff that that happened?
Mostly reacting. They definitely knew when the chef showed up, because that's played up as like a big scary thing.
Yeah.
So they reacted to that. But most of it was like just go or run, or, you know, mm-hmm. I think they were kind of running around on the floor mimicking the actions for the most part.
Oh, that's great.
which was great. So super silly and fun. Great to play with the kids. If you are the kind of person who has kids to play with, I recommend mm-hmm. it. I finished Jack and Daxter with Luke. Mm. And that was fun. That is the perfect level of game for him, underlined by the fact that I went right into Jack 2 thinking like, oh, this is perfect.
Oh, was it
Jack
too much?
Jack 2 starts out with him being tortured for 2 years in a prison and turning into this dark monster and then swearing to get revenge on, like, it is a kid's GTA game, but it's still a GTA game at heart. Like,
yeah. Oh, that's,
you know, you're working with like the slumlord, you know, mafia guy in the city and all this stuff. Yeah. You're very blatantly just stealing cars to ride around. So I was like,
I have no investment in the series, so I don't know if it's my place to say. That seems really misguided based on what I know of the first game. Like, the first game is the only one that I've played any amount of. Like,
yeah, it is. The second one is completely devoid of whimsy and very of its time.
Yeah,
like, you know, came out right around when, you know, that attitude, everything was dark and gritty, like Prince of Persia went the same direction. Right.
It just, it seems like a very pronounced instance of like somebody chasing their nose instead of chasing the horizon.
Yep. And the third one does a great job bringing it back. And that's why I love it so much.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that the second game does well. Like, it is a very good GTA like.
Mm-hmm.
And it never overwhelms you with stuff to do, and still kind of that key platforming element is very much front and center to everything that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But they do a great job of imagining all the different ways you could add flavor or difference to a platformer at heart to make it fun and unique. And back it up with some really good story as well. It's just not a story that I think my 3-year-old is quite ready for.
Right.
the thing that distressed him the most, and distressed I use in a very joking way, like, he loved it overall. I think he just didn't get half of what was going on.
Right.
But every time you arrive at a location, whatever Zoomer or car you're riding, you leave outside, you go in, talk to the people, and then you come back out, mm-hmm. and the game is just kind of forgotten about. It's despawned, and you just go grab another one from whoever's driving by, right. But every time I come up, where'd our airplane go?
Right.
And then, you know, driving up to me, okay, put it there and don't let it go away. Like, he's very concerned that these things are getting deleted between missions.
But because if there's anything that a small child understands, and I can say this with all authority as a childless 30-year-old man, it is, what is mine? Right.
Like, yeah, no, that's exactly it. Yeah. Like, GTA had the decency to have a parking lot outside your building that you can leave your stuff in, it would stay.
But also, I never trusted that parking lot or that garage. I was like, yep, everything is impermanent.
Yep. Yeah.
Time to rocket the neighborhood so that no one steals this car. Yeah.
lots of nostalgia and warm, tingly feelings for both of those games. The second one, we'll have to see if I play it further with Luke. I'm sure he'll ask for it.
Uh-huh.
Is
that a situation where it might be good to, like, maybe load up Daxter, like, on the PS2 or whatever? Or?
Yeah, like, I he certainly wouldn't mind me playing through the first game more, and I've got a long way to go to 100% that. So that might be a good activity. But yeah, I'd be interested to hear from other people if they've got like go-to games to play with kiddos around that age, 3 years old.
I mean, if I recommended playing Ratchet and Clank, would you pop me one in the fucking mouth?
What, up your arsenal or going commando?
Well, no, like, I mean, a kid's not gonna understand that double entendre. They're gonna see a gun that turns people into chickens.
Yeah, no, that is true. No, Ratchet and Clank sticks a lot closer to whimsy than I think Jack does.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't recommending like explaining the way that double entendre worked.
No. No, you see, this is funny because
yeah, it's just like, oh, it's just a nonsense thing. It's a nonsense thing that you're not going to understand until you're like 15. So
no, Ratchet and Clank was more, my brothers were more into it than I was, but I've got a lot of fond memories of that game as well. My downfall with that is I feel like if I'm going to start playing it, I have to go all the way back to the first one, and I think the quality difference between the first Jack game and the last Jack game is not nearly as pronounced as the quality difference between the first Ratchet game and the last Ratchet game.
The only one I ever played was Up Your Arsenal, one of the mid ones in the PS2, and that was a lot of fun.
So they just like being able to strafe is huge. Yeah. And like the first game, you there is no way to strafe. The second game, you can hold down a button to strafe. And then the third game, I think, which is Up Your Arsenal, strafe is like actually the default. So they learn a lot about where they lie on that platformer to third person shooter spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's fun. There's a lot of good games out there.
Yeah, no. And it's awesome that you're able to kind of like find those experiences to share with your kids. Like, especially as young as they are. Go ahead.
Yeah. They're finally at the age where they're like, not get it, but like want to sit and watch and play. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking forward to the next milestone of them actually being able to play with me, which will be a whole new level of fun.
Yeah.
And then we will bust out the Rayman games, because those things are like, childhood in a game.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. You've got a whole road ahead of you with that. I'm not personally interested in having a kids, but I'm kind of jealous anyway.
Hey, you can be the fun uncle. There you go.
Yeah, there we go. That's great. Thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah, that's me. That's everything, I think.
Okay. I've been a little bit more boring.
Not true.
I mean, just like in terms of the games that I've played, I know that I am a vivacious and interesting raconteur otherwise. So most of the stuff that I've been playing over break has been like visual novel stuff. So I played the entirety of Steins Gate Zero. However, it's very difficult to talk about that without spoiling the shit out of the original Steins Gate.
Sure.
And B, like, you know, it's like reading a comic or reading a manga. So it's difficult for me to say like, hey, this is what the game does, because it's almost just kind of barely a game, like even less so than Danganronpa. So I feel bad about being on a tear with these things for as much fun as I'm having doing it. Like, going back and spending time with these characters from Steins Gate was very satisfying. Like, I like those people that are presented there. I like the kind of mechanics of time travel that they built into that.
Mm-hmm.
The structure of this one is a little bit different. So with the minimum of spoilers, like in the first Steins Gate, the different endings are arrived, you know, after you have, you know, after the story reaches a certain kind of a pace, you know, like in the, basically the back half, every chapter has an alternate ending that is like, you know, one that you can choose to pursue that is related to a like an individual character. It's not like a dating sim kind of thing, but like, it is like, okay, I'm going to follow this person's path and then hit that. And then you go back to the branching point and then you continue forward. In Steins Gate Zero, so I should probably go back to the beginning. This is a game about some people who accidentally discover the ability to time travel by sending text messages back to the past and then altering the world line. And your main character is the kind of like one of the only people who has the ability to like understand that things have changed. So like, he stays consistent, whereas everybody else, you know, continues going on like it was. And then, you know, it explores every possibility that relates to that. Like, what if there's only one person who notices that things are going weird, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the structure that I mentioned in Steins Gate 1, the original, kind of relates to like where do they decide to cut it off, like to say, hey, this is like way too much. Steins Gate Zero is more like you play the initial chapter and then things kind of branch from there to like two major paths that have three endings off of them, and then like one path that sends a piece of information back to the beginning of the other path that unlocks the true ending at the back of it. So it's a little bit more an exploration kind of thing, because again, mm-hmm. like the thing that gets sent back in time is information. So it is like you sending info from one save to another to get that.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just like the conspiracy gets bigger. Everybody's character development continues from the very end. So you would think like, hey, going from the first entry in a series to another is, you know, like, okay, well, they're going to like Metroid it. They're going to like reset everybody. No. Like the main character has like straight up PTSD from the events of the first game. And there are a number of other factors that spring directly from one of the endings you can get in the first game. And the way that like the sequel nestles into the timeline is incredibly creative. You know, like how do you write a sequel for a game that has an ending where everything works out? Well, this game does it improbably, right? It's not like a new crisis comes along. And I've said too much. So like both myself and Jolly have talked about Steins Gate, you know, and you know, it's for a very specific kind of person. And that person is somebody who is willing to play a visual novel style game. That's like a motion graphic, motion comic kind of thing. So yeah, limited gameplay, but also one of those kind of people who is not looking for something specifically erotic. Like it is a serious story that doesn't mm-hmm. play into like pornographic kind of stuff. So like, you know, calibrate your tastes accordingly. But like, if you play the original Steins Gate, then I have no hesitation recommending the second one, recommending Steins Gate Zero for you.
Cool.
How long did it take you to beat?
It's like a 20-hour game.
Dang.
Okay. And that's like every ending.
Yeah.
And that will depend on like if you are a quick reader, if you have the voiceover turned on and you're listening to the entire thing, the voiceovers are all in Japanese. So like I had the voiceovers on so I could understand like the tenor of what somebody would say, but I was skipping a lot after I figured out like what, you know, if this was a dramatic scene or a comedic scene, right?
Yeah, I kind of fell into a similar pattern with Danganronpa.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really intrigued by the idea of like, hey, there's two main paths that you're sending kind of information between, because even though, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, kind of what you're sending to the other path is just a text message, you, the player, know the ins and outs and details all behind that text message. Right. It'd be really interesting if there was a way to play to actually like limit your knowledge of what you're getting, that you get a text that is very concise or confusing, and you have to figure out how that applies or what the person mm-hmm. who knows what happens trying to change meant, versus kind of knowing the full extent of both sides.
Yeah, the way it plays out is far more simple than what you're describing, than what you're saying would be interesting. It's still interesting, but it is very much like, oh, you have to pick this path first and then hit this particular flag.
Yep.
Yeah.
You'd almost, if you wanted to do what I'm describing, you almost need it like between two players then, truly, mm-hmm. So that you don't just metagame.
Yeah. I mean, and if we're taking this to its like absurd extreme, then like Virtue's Last Reward does that, right? Just by having so many bad endings that have a small piece of information where you, the player, you know, who are the only, you know, you're the only consistent thing. You're getting all of those things at the very end of those. But like, as we saw with Jala and the wake of flipped tables behind her, you know, that particular pace isn't for everybody.
Sure.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's cool. I have moved on to another game by that same team. 5PB came out here this year, called Chaos Child. And it's,
what's it called?
It's called Chaos Child, and it's okay. It's like punctuated in a weird way, just like Steins Gate. Like Steins Gate has a semicolon in between. This is Chaos semicolon Child, because hey, anime style kind of stuff. So like this is all part of like a larger series that is all it's called like Science Adventures or something like that, where like they're roughly related, but each of them, like each of the major franchises within the series has a you know, a particular thing. Like one's about mecha, one's about time travel, that's Steins Gate. This one is about like psychology and reality, kind of changing powers. This one is more specifically specifically horror based, if the opening chapters are to be believed. And the idea is that like your character suffers delusions that are so powerful they alter reality themselves. I haven't played enough of it to like to talk about it with any real you know, kind of authority about where it ultimately goes, but the idea is that like the branches happen as you're choosing whether or not to have like a positive or negative delusion. So like, does this thing work out like far more horribly or like far more implausibly positive than it otherwise would?
Cole, have you ever heard of Psychopass Mandatory Happiness?
No.
Okay. It was a PlayStation Plus game this month, and it seems very visual novel. Mm-hmm. Like it's based on the manga and all that stuff. Yeah. Or an anime.
I definitely downloaded it. I definitely have it. Is that a Vita game?
I believe it is Vita. I don't know yet if it's cross by. Looks like it is with PlayStation 4.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm curious. Based on that, like, you know, as I said, I'm kind of on a tear with these.
Yeah.
Things.
I was gonna say, just to feed the tear here, feed the bender.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's difficult because like it's hard to talk about these in terms of like mechanics or play, because you're like reading them. It is like at the very far end of like what adventure games do, but like I'm playing them on a video game system and I'm getting the satisfaction of choice out of them, right?
So you don't have to apologize for that when we spent the first half of the episode talking about board games.
No, I mean, okay, I'll take that. I will take your absolution there. It's fine. The other thing that I've played, you know, since I've been away, I have come back and I stream Stories Untold.
I saw some of this last night. It was last night, right?
Yeah, it was like last night, and then like the night before New Year's Eve. It was like Friday when I did this. What did you see?
I saw a computer terminal, and I saw like a sad realization about a character.
That could be any of the episodes that I played.
All right.
Yeah. So Stories Untold is a 2017 indie horror game. I stream this as part of the Hex Crank series, where it is presented as like this anthology kind of series. You know, you have four different episodes they have to play in sequence. It's made in Unity, and all of the kind of scenarios that you're playing involve you. Okay, so this is hard. It's very hard to paint a word picture of. You are playing as a person who is interacting with some kind of interface. Okay, so like you're looking at the window, and like in the first episode you're looking at it like a desk. You know, it's got a lamp on it, it's got a like a 1980s style, you know, microcomputer, like Commodore kind of thing, with an alarm clock on the top of it and a couple of family photos around it. And the computer is running like a text adventure where, you know, the character is like coming to this house that's abandoned, like where they used to live. Right. So, okay. You know, like it is not just a straight up text adventure. It is a text adventure with like meta context around it. Right.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
Are you following along?
I don't get the meta context.
It, if it was just a text adventure, it would be a window on your computer that like had your call and response on it. Like this is like the computer that you're entering the responses into is like in the world of the game, and you are playing as a character who is playing this thing.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And like the second episode, you know, I don't want to spoil too much, but like you are a scientist who is interacting with a bunch of like different imaging machines to examine this crazy artifact that fell to the earth in a meteor, right? And then episode 3 and episode 4 involve that. And it's, you know, I don't want to say it's like heavy on it, because like they're not particularly difficult, but like it leans on like puzzle solving and, you know, kind of like code breaking to a certain extent as you're following it. But each of these little scenarios has its own particular twist. And without spoiling an awful lot, like you think, nope, I'm not going to say that because that gets that reveals too much. But like it plays with form, both of what you're doing in the game and overall, in a very interesting way that makes me, you know, want to readily recommend this. The problem that I had was when I was playing this last night, as of the time we recorded this, ended up having like a lot of technical issues where just walking around didn't work, or when I was like trying to type in, you know, the codes that it was telling me to type in, like maybe the input would happen 30 seconds after the button press.
Yeah, that's not good.
I have no idea if that's the fault of the programmers, the fault of Unity, or the fault of my own particular like input output kind of situation I have with my computers here with like screen sharing and stuff like that. So it's hard to know who to be angry at. I'll default to being angry at myself for that, but it was a frustrating experience to like have my inputs not result in anything or not result in what I intended, on a stream especially.
I just saw the part where you were asking for your mother and you were asking it in like 20 different ways.
Yeah. So the stream was fun. The stream was an awful lot of fun to do. And like, there were some funny moments that came out of it. Like by all means, go and look at that to see, but like, this is a game that is kind of, I think it's a balloon that is popped by a spoiler. Right, like it all kind of falls apart if you know what it's adding up to. So forgive me if I have contributed to that in any way. I would recommend.
Is it scary?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. it is that meta stuff. It's the meta stuff where all of that kind of like adds up and like starts like prickling at the back of your neck because it does unexpected things. And I don't know that I can explain more without like giving up what happens in the first or second kind of places. What I would say is like, watch for it, like go buy it now. If this sounds like a thing that you're interested in, it could like a code based text adventure puzzle kind of game with meta horror stuff and 80s styling, like go play it because nice. I would recommend it. Otherwise, like, take a look at the stream because I'm pretty happy with some of the stuff that I typed in. But yeah. But yeah, that story's untold. Any questions about that?
No. Sounds worth playing.
Cool. I hope they do more. I hope that this was successful enough for them to make something else, either in this world or, you know, kind of with a different seed, because the stuff that they did displays a great amount of creativity, and I would like to think they have something else in them. Yeah, cool. So that's all that I've played. Do you all want to button it up?
Yeah, let's button.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode number 225 of The Level. We're so happy to have you in 2018, this new year. Hope all of you had a wonderful, you know, kind of passel of year-end holidays there. I know I did, and you heard about some of those there. Anyway, if you want to support the show, if you want to participate in multiplayer stuff, you can go to facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast to look for those prompts going up, or to just, you know, comment on episode postings or share stories, etc. If you want to support the network and all the stuff we do financially, go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Or if you want to watch the streaming stuff, you can follow the network, twitch.tv/duckfeedtv, or Why don't we do this separate of the other stuff? Because Dennis, I know you've been streaming, and Ben, you do streaming stuff as well. Dennis, where can people watch you stream?
Yeah, I usually stream or always stream when I'm streaming at GreenLaser73.
Ben?
I don't really stream, but if I were to stream, you could watch me stream at MerkleBe on Twitch.
Yeah. MerkleBE.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You don't stream because you don't want to get stream sniped for all that competitive Rocket League that you do.
That's right. I can't give away my moves.
Wait a minute. Stream sniped?
Streams that it's an insanely fast connection that allows you to stream snipe in Rocket League.
Oh, so it's like you watch somebody play Rocket League and you join the same game and you use that for valuable intel.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
More of a thing in like Hearthstone than it is in anything action oriented.
Okay. Okay. There we go. That makes a degree of sense to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So cool. Well, I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around for some titles. Man, it's always daunting to do titles post Toadie.
The pressure's on. Yeah. We're in the shadow of Monolith.
I know, right? It's like, I'm 4 months from now, it's not going to be a thing. But right now I'm comparing what I have written down, the two I have written down to what won the popular adulation. So who has some titles?
I have one.
Hi. Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
I have Rockets, which are exactly what they sound like.
Can you remind me of the context of that?
Yeah, Dennis was describing a game. I think he was describing Heavy Bullets. He says something about a laser. He's like, this, and rockets, which are exactly what they sound like.
Oh, I like that a lot.
That's good.
Dennis.
Yeah, I've got five. I've got I Am a Valid Human. early on. Storm Dancer 2.
Okay.
That's an expensive button.
What was that in relation to?
The PS4's touchpad.
Okay, yeah.
He got fermented from our beer chat.
Right.
And then she's all Crumple Zone.
Okay. I have technological time coffins and contract cupcakes.
Good alliteration there.
I gotta say, Rockets, which are exactly what they sound like, is pretty tempting. We haven't done a really long title in a while, and I want to open up with a bang.
Sure, I'll take it.
Okay, cool. Sweet. Ben, any objections?
No, not at all.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, oh shit. No, I don't want to. I do not want to enable dictation. Nicholas. No. Don't ask again. Okay. Cool. Well, I'm going to go get this edited and then go to bed. I'm going to continue. Hope that I can continue the nap from my pasta mistake. yeah. So take care, everybody.
Yeah. Good luck getting back to work.
Yes. Same to you.
All right. See you guys around.
Have a good night. Later. Have a good week.
Oh, Ben, thank you for Cuphead. I want to talk about it next week.
Okay. Sweet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. See you guys
later.
See you. Bye.